Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 102, your one-stop for manga news and commentary for the week of June 23rd, 2014. I am your host, Derek, and I'm joined by Mo.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, indeed. I hate mornings.
Bones ache.
Mornings are awful. They suck.
That's not even it. I was just napping until we're ready to freaking record, and I was like, okay. And I'm like checking, make sure that you message. And okay, they message. I heard a message. Okay, you ready? I'm like just trying to get up.
Yeah, that's just me trying to actually wake up myself. But all right, well, how's your week been since the last time we recorded?
Oh yeah, it's all right. I got to go see my dad's workplace finally.
Cool.
And he pointed out that the place he used to work at was actually a lot bigger, and it's a lot bigger, the previous place, but now it's smaller because but previously his company got let off, but then some people managed to scrounge together, make another bit of a company, make another brand, keep it alive and stuff, and he managed to get a job, keep his job still.
Right.
It was alright, though. I learned to, like, solder iron. It's not really what I thought. I thought it was generally drilling, because I looked at it, I was like, it's just, oh, drilling, but really you take the tip and you heat it up, and then and the tip's heated already, and then you take like a copper wire, no, like a wire strip or something, different wire, and you put it in and you just melt it to try and like seal the thing from falling out. Like usually he builds like controls for cranes, bridges, and trolleys. So he does it to seal the switches to keep it from falling out.
That's kind of important.
Yes, it does. It is very important. And he uses torque to keep these nuts from falling out. Nuts and bolts, okay? Nuts and bolts. Yeah, it's pretty simple stuff. He basically assembles. He's a service technician. He assembles and service technician. But the circuit stuff, that's not his job. That's someone else's job.
Ah, okay.
That stuff's complicated. I don't even want to do that stuff.
Mm. Yeah, it probably pays better.
It does.
All right. Well, yeah, my week has kind of been discovering that taking a notebook to work, sketchbook to work, and just drawing a bunch of random crap is actually kind of therapeutic.
I took a notebook, a blank notebook, expecting to take notes in. All of a sudden, I never got a chance to use those ones. I was like, why did I bring it in the first place?
I mean, I have notebooks at work that I use and I write stuff in, but there's just something nice about being able to just have, you know, be able to do something that doesn't really take much thought in the execution. While thinking up story ideas at work is a little hard because I'm on phone calls pretty much all the time, and then I have, and then trying to think in between phone calls is difficult because, you know, your mind is so full of, you know, what you are working on. And then just having a note, just a sketchbook is really nice. It's just, it's very nice, therapeutic. Maybe I'll actually get good at art. Who knows, in several years.
Yeah, just keep doing it. Maybe you'll be as good as one.
Yeah.
As good as one.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Murata, I'm talking about one. If you've seen his artwork, you're surprised at how it got so popular because of the story, not the art itself.
Yeah, I've seen
that. But he did try with the art. It's hardly good. He did try.
Yeah, I've seen that, but oh well. You know, some people just, yeah, art isn't their strong point, but I don't know, maybe I'll be able to do webcomic level art at some point. But anyway.
Also, this is the week of Tite Kubo's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Hang on. I actually found a site that actually kind of has a list of famous mangaka's birthday. Of course, most of them I don't know, but let's see. Today is the week of Hideo Yamamoto, Tite Kubo, Takeshi Konomi, Takashi Shina, Chiho, wait, no, sorry, wrong one, Ken Ishikawa, Tetsuya Sawatari, Yuki Kamatani, since Sunday's the first day here for us. Reiko Okano, that's it. Oh, and of course, my birthday too. Share with Tite Kubo and Takeshi Konomi. Takeshi Konomi is the one who actually wrote Prince of Tennis, by the way.
Indeed. Well,
I'm surprised.
That's actually a good segue. Let's go ahead and talk about the news for the week. Starting with the Japanese comic rankings for June 9th through the 15th. And let's see, we have in 10th place Saint Young Men, Volume 10.
Yeah. Ah. Dang. Too many windows open. Okay. Okay. 9th place, Yowamushi Petal, Volume 34.
8th place, Mahouka Koko no Ritosai, Recollection Arc, Volume 1.
7th place, Toriko, Volume 30.
6th place, LDK 15.
Oh. 5th place, The Flowers of Evil, Volume 11.
4th. Jeez, pay attention. 4th place, Haikyuu, Volume 11.
3rd place, My Love Story, Volume 6.
2nd place, Mix, Volume 5.
And 1st place, One Piece, Volume 74. With Attack on Titan. I don't see Attack on Titan anywhere except Regrets, but that's a spin-off.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, for some reason, well, you know, that's just the thing. One Piece may not be dominating the charts for, like, months on end, but when it does come out, it beats out all the competition. Because everyone that wants it gets it when they, you know, as soon as it comes out.
And that's so, a fan.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about it, you know, they get over 2 million... They get pretty much around 2 million copies sold in just the first week that it comes out. And it took Attack on Titan volumes how many months to reach those numbers? So
6 months? 5 months?
I don't know. But yeah. All right. Next bit of news is, of course, the New York Times manga bestseller list for June 8th through the 14th.
That's our territory.
Yep. And in 10th place, we have Naruto volume 65.
9th place, Attack on Titan volume 2.
8th place, Kamisama Kiss, Volume 15.
7th place, Soul Eater, Volume 20.
6th place, High School DD, Volume 1.
5th place, Wolf Children, Ame and Yuki.
4th place, Attack on Titan, Volume 1.
3rd place, Millennium Snow, Volume 3.
2nd place, One Piece, Volume 71. That went from 9th place to on its first week to 2nd place on its second week. Not bad. I guess people that like One Piece aren't as on the ball over here. It's like,
because they're busy with life. And
yeah, or that, or they just didn't pay attention.
Because in Japan, anime and manga are life.
Yeah, but
I'm sorry, it sounds stereotypical, but it kind of seems true, seeing how small the country is.
Yeah, keep digging that hole, Mo. But nonetheless, as I was trying to say, I kind of just like to imagine people, you know, comes out and then a good chunk of people get it and then the rest of the people are like, oh, what? Oh, right, yes. And then they go get it. And, all right, first place?
Crimson Spell, Volume 4.
I have no idea what that is.
I think it's a Yaoi, Shonen Yaoi.
Okay.
That feed art looks Yaoi to me.
Right, all right, well... We now have the North American anime and manga releases for June 15th and 21st. Starting with Buzo Shinki, Armored War Goddess DVD Complete Collection.
Pokemon Black and White Rival Destinies DVD Set 3.
Red Data Girl DVD Complete Series.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to try robots. Shiki DVD Blu-ray Complete Series SAV Edition.
Interesting. That's a series I need to watch. I read part of the anime, the manga, and I quite liked it. It was quite well done.
A manga of it?
Yeah. All right, let's see. Manga releases. Battle Royale, Angel's Border.
Oh. Dance in the Vampire Bun, Forgotten Tales.
Fairy Tale, Volume 39.
Gakuen Policy, Volume 1. Wait a second. Did I swear I read this? Nah, that is something else. I swear. This was mentioned sometime somewhere. Ah, whatever.
Yeah. Next one.
You're the next one. I just read Gakuen Policy, Volume 1.
No, that was me.
Oh, no, you read Fairy Tale.
No, I'm pretty sure that was me because I started with Battle Royale.
Oh, right,
And
okay.
you did.
Hagen, okay, right. Hagen Knight, I don't have many friends, Volume 7. This is the reason why.
Yes. Yeah, just in future, if I say you did the last one, just trust me on that, okay?
Okay.
All right, Mobile Suit Gundam: The Origin, Volume 6.
Neon Genesis Evangelion, Shinji Ikari, Raising Project, Volume 14.
We should probably look at that series sometime.
Probably.
Yep, number 6, Volume 7.
That's just confusing. Okay. Strike Witches, the sky that connects us. Connects us.
And Holic, Omnibus number 2.
Ah.
Yes.
No other releases. I guess there's no game, no movies, no whatever.
It would appear so, yeah. Oh well. No worries, no worries. All right, let's
All
see.
right.
Now, what
Here's
else do we have for news?
some interesting other news. Okay, you guys remember Hachi, that series by Nishi? Well, he's starting a new series called Mamono Kateshi. And I have to admit, that's pretty amazing because his last series kind of blundered, I don't know, at some point. And usually I would have thought that he would have just went and go, I'm gonna move somewhere else. No, he decided to stay in Shonen Jump and still try and get a new series published. That takes a lot, I guess.
Indeed.
And another series that's starting is by Shibashi, the one that did Neura Rise of Yokai Clan.
Right.
Starts Tsukumogami manga. Now, the thing about this one is that he actually did the light novel art for it. Or, wait, the art? Wait. Yeah, he did the art for it. The light novel is by Yoshi Manaka, but he did the art and illustrations for it. So, him doing the manga version of it is kind of interesting because he's done the art for it, but he doesn't do the writing for it. But since he does the art for it, he should have had some input on the light novel itself in some way. So, this is going to be interesting since it's not really his own series, but rather it's like a series that he drew art for, but he's going to be doing adaptation, manga adaptation for it. And it looks interesting. I mean, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to get excited about a manga by someone who did a manga I did not care for.
True.
So, yeah. All right, what else do we have?
Okay. Appleseed Alpha CG anime film gets a spin-off manga. Okay, moving on for that one. Selector Infected Weak Sauce Weak. I swear, Japan, what
Wick
is with your
sauce?
names?
Wick sauce?
Weak Sauce.
No.
I just sound so wrong no matter how I say it.
Yeah.
Okay, Selector Infected Weak Sauce card game anime gets two spin-off manga. Okay. Neil Dudgerson. Haregu's Kindachi starts Dragon Quest X romantic comedy manga. Wait, what? It's an online game? Something? Totally. Okay, let's just read the story about this one. The story centers around Powder, who has been enjoying the world of Dragon Quest X and spends every day playing with party members online. God, I wish I could do that sometimes. One day, Powder unexpectedly has to share a room in real life with a teammate named Goro. They discover that their real life personas are not quite the same as their game personas. So it's a manga based off of that. They're revolving around that.
Yes.
Actually, there was a manga I read, like, I think a year ago called Sprite, where one of the characters is actually this 40-year-old guy who has been playing this online game for 10 years, and when it finally shut down, he was 40 years old. He's super rich, though. The thing is, he's super rich. That's the twist about it. So
Okay.
it's like, I'm super rich. I could do whatever I want, but I'll just play games all day.
You'd have to be super rich to be able to play a game all day, really.
True. But this the manga itself is probably a very interesting series. It's got to do with like alternate realities, I guess, in some ways. Okay.
Right.
Vampire Knight Hino starts Shurikento Pleats manga. It's about ninjas.
You don't say.
The Shuriken, obviously. Okay. This one I'm actually excited about. I haven't read this series in a while. Digital manga and supernatural manga, Iris Zero. it's basically about, it follows a story about a normal boy in a world full of superpowered people. Now, the thing is that, for the most part of what I read, it's not really superpowers running all over the place and destroying people. It's more like just, in like a normal everyday society in school, though. Mostly in school. And it's just, yeah. Just don't expect it to be like, you know, your supernatural fighting. No, it's not even that. It's just a slice of life, I guess you kind of say, but not slice of life, but there's kind of story to it. It's just take supernatural, put it in a modern, normal setting, and that's it. Regular life, generally.
Fun.
It's not bad, though. Okay. United Kingdom Breakdown Press offers, what is it, UK? I read it's UK or something. United Kingdom. UK's Breakdown Press offers Seiichi Hayashi Flowering Harbor manga. The first book in planned line of Japanese comics to debut on July 1st. Okay, so it's a British publisher. Breakdown Press announced on Thursday it released Seiichi's Hayashi Flowering Harbor at the Japan Foundation in London on July 1st. Okay, the story is described as a love story filtered through the aesthetics of Enka music, known informally as Japanese blues. Well, I gotta check that out. Japanese blues.
Interesting.
I like blues. Okay. Digital manga's Captain Ken Kickstarter reaches gold. Both volumes expected to ship to backers in February 2015. This is pretty much Captain Ken is basically old manga done by Osamu Tezuka.
Right.
Yeah. That's good. Okay, I'll just start the story because I'm sure if you want to know about this. Captain Ken takes place in the future when Earth has already colonized Mars as a new frontier. Oh, good, they got rid of the cockroaches finally. Uh-huh. The story opens up with a diary entry from a Martian recalling the history of how the Earthlings came to be the supreme rulers of Mars. It started in the year 1983 when these Earthlings landed on our home. Our ancestors approached the strange creatures, but that was when their terror began. We didn't know for how long this dark period would last. Then one day, he came. This savior is Captain Ken. He's a mysterious young gunslinger from Earth who traveled to Mars with his trusty sidekick and gadget horse, Arrow. Ken and his friends soon find themselves caught in the crossfire of the Martian Earthlings as the tension between the two species escalates. Huh, wow. He kind of did this Mars thing before the other guy did Mars.
Huh, I kind of want... suddenly, I kind of want that, want a copy of that. That sounds really interesting, but I didn't know about the Kickstarter, unfortunately, so...
I didn't even know about it either. I think there was a mention, but I didn't even catch it that fast.
Oh, well. Well, probably. I imagine it will be available in other ways. I mean, they're not just going to sell it to the Kickstarters.
Yeah, they're just trying to get published, so eventually they'll have enough extra copies over, and okay, want to buy now.
Right, yeah, I'm going to look this up on Amazon quickly.
Okay, this news might...
Let's just say trigger warning for some people.
Okay, trigger warning and not safe for work. This is your chance to go ahead and skip to the next part. Yeah. Okay. Now I'll start. Hentai website Faku enters publishing business with Japan's Wani magazine. The first titles are Red and I, Sample by Homunculus, TTK by Ishike, Punikano by Pionti, and Welcome to Tokoharuso by Gunma Kisaragi. I like that last name right there. But, yeah, so this is interesting because... Oh, come on, for crying out loud, I'm sure everyone's read hentai at some point. Don't hide it. That's why you're reading this in the first place, aren't you? Anyways, why I read this is strange thing because, since they're going to be publishing and partnering with a Japanese publisher, that would mean that any others that, you know, isn't published by that publisher may be removed at some point because they're going to be partnered and they can't just publish work by another publisher and publish works that aren't published by the publisher, which are millions and dozens. So, I don't know why I thought I was like, oh yeah, this sounds like it might be a slow, tragic end to them, but, you know, they're entering a partnership. I don't think they'll care. I don't think they get money. Anyway, something I read about about the site itself, apparently it's a block in Japan, obviously, because. So this kind of helps them in a way stay alive, I guess. But then again, they were kind of just publishing free most of the time, except for Project H. Project H, I think, was one of the ones that, well, they did have Velvet Blue or something, anyone? And that one long series before that with a really long super name I can't remember, but I actually like the series about too. Yeah, so this is interesting, to be honest. This is something to keep an eye on. Yes, I know, it's porn. Get over it.
It's certainly an interesting concept to see all these
development.
All these scanlation and fan sub sites and whatnot getting, you know, making actual proper deals. It's heartening in a way because it shows that Japan has realized, oh, wait a minute, trying to stop piracy probably won't work. But if we work with some of these people, if we either, you know, work with the companies that already have our licenses, or we, you know, we sell new licenses to these other places that are already doing, you know, translation and whatnot, might be able to, you know, make some money off of it. So.
Well, the thing is, most of these works aren't even, like, published by actual publishers. Published by groups called Circles. Like, a group of people that worked on it, and then, you know, they move on to something else. It's more like just a group. So in order to actually publish those, they have to contact each of those group members, like the leader generally, and then the leader will have to find the people who are part of their circle and get their confirmation and, you know, hold consensus, you know, unanimous, or we have a 3-2, 3 wins, the other 2, we don't care about them. The 3 of us won more or something. So it'll be like that, yeah.
Okay.
It'll be pretty difficult, but I don't think the change will happen within the year, but probably within the end of the year. There might be some changes to the site where we don't have these series anymore. Look at else. Oh, well, I don't even check that site anymore. I stopped checking that site like a couple months back.
Right, well.
Really?
Yeah. I mean. Let's talk about something else.
Oh, yes. This other one, this is the one I want. This one I'm kind of excited about. Actually, pretty excited about. What is Manga 2.5? An innovative style of manga has arrived. Japanese manga has been transformed into a motion comic featuring complete voiceover for professionals. It's an exciting new concept which you can check out online now. I believe there is something called Vomic. Except they don't really move, but they kind of voiceover and all. I remember that, Vomic. Sound like vomit. You replace T with T.
Right.
Japan. Tis. But V is more like B anyway, so it'd be Vomic. That makes no sense anymore.
No, it doesn't.
It makes no sense at all. But yeah, Manga 2.5 is a motion comic which is made directly from original manga pages, not digital comic or traditional animation. It's a completely new style of comic-based entertainment. One of their examples is, one of their samples is the series Karasuma Kyoko no Jikenbo, Chapter 1, The Oni Feet. Now, I haven't checked that out, but, it's pretty intriguing. Manga 2.5 is made by taking the original pages of a manga, then splicing them with color, movement, voiceovers recorded by popular voice artists, sound effects, and background music, transforming them into a motion comic. The awesomeness of the original manga is explored to its full potential and given a little extra flavor, creating a finished product that's neither manga nor anime, but a brand new way of enjoying some amazing stories. Manga comes alive before your eyes. You can find it on the Renta website, where you can also rent manga securely from $1. Yeah, the site is run Renta.
Cool. All right. Well, that's pretty exciting. All right. Do we have any other news, or is that it?
All I can say, it'll take years for them to ever do One Piece. Ever.
Yeah.
Or even, no. Actually, I want to see them try to do JoJo Bizarre Adventure. That'd be hilarious. And I'll be like, what am I saying here? I don't know. Why am I posing? I don't even know. Why are you posing? You have to pose if you actually want to understand the story, man. Mm. By Siri. It's not a joke. Anyways, that's it for the news.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment, shall we? It's time for the manga review section of Manga Cubed, and this week we start off with the brand new Fairy Tail Volume 39. You know what I've been, you know what I've been thinking would be nice? If we if we were able to get review copies of books and then they'd send them to us early and then we could do reviews of stuff like the week of the release of the manga. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't hear you very well. Speak up a bit.
Yes, yes.
All right. You have your mouth right in front of the mic?
No, I was speaking down for some reason.
Oh. Weird. For some reason it seems quieter this time, but whatever. Let's talk about Volume 39 of Fairy Tail, which is the continuation of the fight against Shadow Evil Rogue and...
Shadow Rogue.
Yeah. Well, he's always Shadow Rogue.
That sounds like a classic RPG class title. It's like, your rogue leveled up and evolved into a Shadow Rogue.
It does, kind of, doesn't it?
They can blend into the shadows. Okay, that's nice.
Yeah. I'm kind of amused how in the first chapter you've got Rogue is all, oh yeah, you know, the world was destroyed because of Lucy, and then you end the chapter with Lucy, we can't open the door, we have to shut it right now. And immediately you're thinking, oh no, she's being controlled by someone that's causing her to shut the door. But then in the very next chapter you find out that, oh wait, the fact that she looked so stoned or being mind controlled, no, that was actually a red herring. She was actually received information from what's-his-face, Orologium, who sent her the information saying that, okay, yeah, the door leads 400 years into the past, and there are dragons coming out of it. And I have to say, the two-page spread of the dragon, of the first dragon as it comes out of the gate, is pretty freaking awesome. You know, just you just see how massive one of these things is.
Although, the question is, did that dragon actually stay in the area when it came out, or just go back in?
I think that one flew off. Because I think a lot of them kind of like, you know, just came out and flew off. And then we started the fight against the dragons, and we discover that the dragons that were, the 10,000 dragons that were said to, that were going to be attacking the kingdom, came through the door that they opened.
Well, that makes sense.
Because there were no dragons in the present, they're all from the past, and so...
Michelle Rose all like, aha, I lied.
Yeah, it is pretty... Yeah. It is kind of a nice twist where, you know, that's how everything, you know, kind of goes to crap. But anyway, they managed to close the door, but there's a bunch of dragons everywhere. And it turns out that Rogue knows how... Rogue knows how to control dragons.
Beat your Rogue.
And, ooh, Jesus, something weird just happened to my mic.
Oh, that was just the garbage truck.
No, it wasn't that. It was like, you know, when we did the, when I called you on Skype, it didn't ring.
Oh.
And my audio was very quiet, so I was like, I don't know what's going on. But then, well, I could not hear myself very well, but then I saw that, you know, the audio was maxing out, and then just suddenly, just now, I just heard the sound of the Skype call, and suddenly my audio got louder. I'm just like, I don't know what's going on. This better be the computer that's acting up and not my mic. But anyway, great, now I have to sit a little further back because it's too loud. But all right, let's see. Yeah, so it turns out that Rogue has a magic that can control dragons, and then we've got a bunch of dragons facing off against everyone, and you've got the dragon slayers having to kind of, you know, split up and fight the dragons. They bring back Cobra, one of the fake dragon slayers.
I like how the part went when everyone's like using Chinese magic, they're like, wait a minute, and then not to take down one of the dragons, like, hey guys, we're dragon slayers. Use that!
Yeah. It is kind of like, dudes, come on. But yeah, it does kind of show, it is, I don't know, dragon slaying magic has always been kind of interesting because it's not shown to be particularly more powerful than any other type of magic, you know? Mm-hmm. Because it's a bit of an odd, the power level differences is a bit odd because on the one hand, we're introduced to dragon slayer magic saying, it's powerful enough to take down dragons, okay? So you've got dragons who are said to be very powerful, but then you see the dragon slayers having a hard time fighting people that aren't dragons. And, you know, you even have people whose magic could defeat Natsu or any of the other dragon slayers, and you start thinking, okay, so are they powerful enough to fight a dragon? But apparently not, because only dragon slayer magic can really defeat a dragon, which makes it really weird because
dragon must fight dragon.
Yeah, that's not an answer, but you know, it's really confusing because you've got dragon slayer magic, which is the only thing that can beat dragons, but there's other magic that can beat dragon slayer magic. So isn't that magic by definition stronger, or is this like a type disadvantage thing? Like dragons are weak against dragon magic, while humans are weak against any kind of magic, you know?
Humans are the normal type in this world.
Yeah, it's like humans are, I guess that kind of makes sense, where human magic can't hurt a dragon, but human magic can hurt a dragon slayer because a dragon slayer is still human. So I guess the difference between a human dragon slayer and a dragon is that dragon slayers have the attack power of a dragon, but not necessarily the defensive capabilities. Which would kind of make sense, because that would explain how someone like Urza could be strong enough to resist the attack of a dragon when fighting a dragon slayer, and still be strong enough to defeat Natsu because he's still human. He doesn't have the defense against human magic, while Urza's same power would not be enough to take down a dragon. But the dragon still would, she'd still be able to defend herself against a dragon as well as she could defend herself against Natsu. She just can't beat the dragon, which I guess in that case it makes sense, but I kind of get the feeling that I'm giving Mashima a lot more credit than he actually bothered putting into this.
So, about those fights.
Those fights, yeah. You know, ignore the other fights. Let's talk about Zirconus.
Because he's the most important dragon that we know of.
Yes.
Other than Ikki and the other two.
He has the ability to, his breath, or, well, I guess it's, yeah, his breath has the ability to disintegrate clothing and nothing else.
So he's a pervert dragon.
Yeah, except, and so you've got all the soldiers that are all just all naked now, and they end up running away because, like, we can't fight like this. And you've got, I kind of like Mira's reactions, like, I've never seen such an awful sight in my life. Well, look who has high standards, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but, yeah, that is kind of hilarious. And then, of course, the minister is naked as well. But, yeah. And
somehow Cardio's didn't get turned. His armor somehow protected against that. I don't know how.
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, I guess it's not really his breath. It was actually magic that he used. But it turns out that Zirconus has this magic that he uses to get rid of clothes because he likes to eat people, but their clothes taste awful. So, in a way, that actually kind of makes sense, you know? It's obviously being used for very blatant fan service, but you gotta admire Mashima for having the cheek to be able to actually have it make sense. And, of course, but, you know, whether it makes sense or not, we discover the reason when he, of course, uses his magic on Lucy, and yeah, she's completely naked. Again. Yep. Well, actually, I think this is the first time we've seen her become
completely naked. This is the first time we actually seen her actually be completely naked. And, like, the
during
other time,
a fight, not during.
She loses match. Her. Yeah, she loses her top or bottom, but this time, like, everything's like, holy crap! And she's like, find me.
Yeah, that is kind of hilarious.
Because you're the token fan service character. Period.
Yeah, which, well, not just that's not all she is, but yes, that kind of is what she is. It. Yeah, and of course, she's kind of useless now because she's too worried about the fact that she is completely naked and also dragon's about to freaking eat her.
Oh yeah, wait a second. Because her clothes got disintegrated, her keys, which were attached to her clothes, fell off somewhere.
Yeah, she no longer has... Yeah, she can't really fight anymore. Yeah. But... Yeah, so...
Clothes actually do matter, people.
Yeah, and we actually do get to see... We actually do get to see... My theory put into practice as you've got Mira Jane and Wendy attacking Zirconus. And you've got Mira Jane, who is, of course, obviously much stronger than Wendy, like by a significant amount. Uh-huh. And yet when she attacks Zirconus, it doesn't affect him. And yet when Wendy attacks him, it really hurts him. So much that he throws Lucy away. Yeah, he throws Lucy away and decides, you know what, I'm just going to fight. But, yeah, so I guess that kind of goes, that kind of does support my theory in that Dragon Slayer magic can hurt dragons, but human magic can hurt Dragon Slayers because humans are not dragons. Hence, they don't have the resistance against human magic. See, that makes sense.
Dragons have very high magical resistance.
Yep, except
everything except
magic.
Dragon. So it's like 100% to everything except 100% to everything except zero. But it's like zero to dragon, like minus 100 to dragon.
Dragon magic is super effective against dragons, man. Yeah, and of course you've got the shameless fan service, or I don't even know what to consider this. Is it like a shipping moment or something where...
I gotta say, though, Natsu sure was very bold to do that. It's like, whatever.
It's like he ends up catching Lucy when she goes flying through the air. They fall off the dragon, end up in a bell, and then... Mashima isn't even trying to be... you know, anything but a massive pervert anymore, I swear. Because you've got them in a bell that goes rolling around as they are being pressed against each other.
Ah, yes.
And, yeah, and I think by this kind of does make sense in that one comment, later on where Natsu's like, we've seen you naked so many times, it really has lost all impact. And then, of course, shippers would say, oh, wait, but what does that mean when he does react when he sees Lee-sama? Hmm? So, what does that mean? I'm just going to say that there's a difference between getting used to seeing someone naked and then being embarrassed when you see one of your friends naked because, hey, that's one of your friends.
It doesn't matter, boy or girl, you see one of your friends naked and you're, holy crap, you see him too many times, like, yeah, whatever. I see that for me. I don't care what shit anymore.
And of course, I'm not sure how Natsu gets grab my tits from Lucy saying, no, don't look. I guess it is like, fine, I'll cover them so you don't see, so I don't see them. She's like, this is kind of worse. But yeah. And then, of course, very blatant fan service to the point where you're just like, it's really hard to take this story seriously, you know?
Well, it's fairy tale. I think it's kind of been pointing that out in the first place.
It is kind of
okay, let's get to the rest of the parts, you know, the parts that we really
the parts want. That aren't completely perverted, yes. Yeah, you got Luxus fighting a fire dragon that's made completely out of fire, and it's the, you know, lightning's not doing any good, and you've got Evergreen who makes a comment that a lot of people have been thinking is like, aren't there any water dragon slayers?
Yes, aren't there any?
Yeah, and then Natsu shows up and he's like, oh hey, I found what I need, and I'm gonna eat you now. And yeah, and then they fight, and Natsu just keeps holding on, and keeps, you know, keeps taking bites out of him, I guess.
I'll eat your flame. No, get off of me! Get off of me, you're crazy!
Yeah, and let's see, yeah, and then we get a bit of an interesting image as the dragon starts to realize, hey, wait a minute, this feeling of this dragon slayer overpowering me, this feeling is very familiar. This reminds me of the fire dragon king Igneal. And we see an image of Igneal on top of this fire dragon, holding it down in a position that makes you think, kids, mommy and daddy need some alone time.
This is surely breaking the rule 30 something.
I don't know. What rule?
You know what rule.
Yeah, this is an interesting... I mean, good gosh, I don't know if Mashima realized what he was doing, but it would appear that he has drawn dragon prison rape. That, I mean, good gosh, everything about this, except for the fact that they're dragons and there's no nudity because they don't have clothes, don't use clothes, but it's like the fire dragon's expression, you're just like, oh, geez, this... This is a very unfortunate 2-page spread. I'm going to keep moving. This is an... But then it turns out that Igneal and the other fire dragon were friends, which I guess they were friends with benefit.
Okay, enough of that.
Yeah, so, but yeah, his name is Atlas Flame, and he's joined with Natsu because, hey, Igneal was his friend, and Natsu is... Igneal's child is, I guess as he puts it, like, Igneal's child is the child of one of my own kind. So I guess it's like, you know, there's a connection, special connection between fire dragons.
It's kind of weird how Lactus can do any damage against Atlas Flame, though. I mean, even though he's a second generation-ish, Dragon Slayer. Still a Dragon Slayer.
Well, yeah, I think it was like a type mismatch. Like the Atlas Flame's fire was just too powerful, or something. I guess that sort of like that.
Well, according to Pokemon, fire and light, fire and electricity do regular damage on each other. So I guess that.
Yeah. So I guess I can. And Natsu is a better match because you know
he can eat him.
But. Yeah, it's kind of gruesome, but let's see. And of course, in the next chapter after that, there's like a timeline explaining the, you know, all the time travel and stuff. And I'm just thinking, I'm not even gonna try. Let's get to the
time travel stuff that Altair goes through.
Yeah, I'm just well, no, not even that, but I mean just the time travel in general. But yeah.
Oh, that.
Yeah, so we got
that.
Yeah, so you got a fight between dragons, and I have to say this is pretty badass. I mean, all the ridiculous fan service moments aside, the dragons are pretty freaking awesome. And
well, if they show we're playing all those Monster Hunter games that actually led up to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, hey, look, dragons, and you kind of wonder how can he top this. Well, not very well, I must say, but. Let's see. Then we move on. We're gonna see the flashback where everyone's sad about future Lucy being dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you go forward and
it's future Lucy. Don't worry, the real Lucy's still alive.
Yeah.
You heartless monster, you.
Mm-hmm.
Future Lucy, don't worry.
Yeah, and then of course you've got the confrontation between Miliana, who finds Jalal and is like, oh hey, I hate him because you know I have good reason to hate him.
That is the wrong. Seriously, you're fighting dragons. You're trying to prevent the country from being destroyed, and you're like, I found the guy who killed my friend. I'm gonna kill him.
Mm-hmm, yeah, well, yeah.
Do that afterwards, please. do that afterwards.
Yeah, but then of course you've got Ultir that shows up. It's like, you know, you really shouldn't be angry at Jalal because, you know, I was the mastermind behind it all. And so
I'll like, take all your sins. I die for your sins.
Oh, don't you dare. Do not draw that comparison. But yeah. And so basically, yeah, she Ultir's like, hey, yeah, don't hit Jalal. It was all my fault. So yeah, and let's see. And so you've got Kagero who hears that and says, okay, I won't kill him. But yeah, and let's see. I guess Ultir has like the whole, oh, the only way to do this is to kill Rogue. But am I, you know, can I really do this? You know, must I decide to, it was like, I decided to murder an innocent man. I'm just as evil as I always was. And then, of course, you've got one. Yeah, and then, of course, you've got a moment that is kind of like, what the hell? Where you've got Gray who randomly says, Juvia, there's something I think I need to say to you. And she's like, oh, what could it be? And he's like, well, it isn't anything important. She's like, it could be all important to Juvia. And then, of course, and then Gray gets shot right through the chest, and
then he gets shot some more, and then
right through the chest and everywhere else, and then right in the head, and that ends that chapter. So, yeah, as that came out, I was like, what the hell? It's like, what happened here?
Yeah,
it's suddenly, yeah, it's such a weird moment where it suddenly became very, very serious after another one of the goofy Juvia and Gray moments. So. And Gray is, yeah, kind of dead. But, yeah. And then, of course, let's see. And, yeah. And then, it, yeah, here's sort of, I get to the next chapter, and it's like, oh, he was shot through the head. He's kind of dead.
Yeah, you take a headshot, you're dead. Even as a zombie, even as a, well, except as a certain thing. But headshot, you're dead.
Yep. And then you've got Ultir who discovers a magic that, oh, I have a magic that can turn back time, but, oh, and then, of course, was it Hades is like, yeah, you know, if you do that, you're going to die. So it uses up all of your life. And so she uses it and basically burns herself up, or it looks like she's being burned up to turn back time. And, of course, in the flashback, you see her... You see a shot of her from behind, and she's not wearing anything because, of course. And then, yeah, she uses it up. She uses her magic. She's basically burns herself up, and it looks like she's covered in full-body burns. And she looks... And this was part was actually kind of hilarious, because it turns out that all of her... Like, she paid with her life, and it only turned time back a single minute. And she was just like... It's like, I sacrificed my life, and I received just 1 minute. And she's like, I couldn't save a single person. And then you get the replay of, you know, and then you... Yeah, you get a replay of Gray saving Juvia and, what's-her-face, Merity. But then he suddenly has a flashback of just, like, a memory of what happened. And he actually manages to... You know, suddenly they just stop and they're like, hey, wait a minute. He was like, wait, I'm going to get killed. Wait, something's going on. I just got a vision of my
death. It happens around for everyone all over the country, the world or something. Everyone's like a minute.
Exactly, yeah. So they, yeah, so it gives everyone just that time that they needed to realize, you know, to, you know,
avoid a certain death situation.
Yeah, exactly. Because it does turn out that a bunch of the other people, you know, a bunch of other people are, pretty much dying, that were all, just that 1 minute was the crucial moment. Everyone's dying during that minute. And then they're able to use the memory of what happened to actually fight against it. Like, you know, attack the dragons as they appear. Mm-hmm. And then manage to, yeah. For a lot of people, it was just, oh, you know, it was just a weird moment that didn't matter. But for the people in the fight, it was, you know, it was pretty important because it gave them... Fight. Yeah, it gave them the chance to avoid, you know, to know where the attack that would have killed them would come from. So, and that's the end of that volume. So.
Yeah, I just gotta say, the thing about the old tier thing, the 1 minute thing, it reminded me of another show I used to watch. It was based off a French online game.
Oh, yeah.
It's it, yeah. Wakfu.
Wakfu, right.
Just watch it. I could say it, but I'm sure something.
I should watch that, but I haven't yet. So I'll get around to it eventually.
When I saw that, I was like, oh wow, I guess the other guy got up luckier than. No, he still didn't get up luckier.
Yeah.
Hers mattered. His was like, what the.
Yep.
It was just really sad though.
All right, yeah. So what do we think of Volume 39 overall?
I like the dragons. The
dragons were cool.
The fan service is excusable because of the dragons.
Well, yeah, well, it's Mashima. I mean, what else do we expect? So
this is where he just goes on for consent. This is where he's like, oh, whatever, I'll just go with it.
Yeah, it is, you know, I mean, if you're going to be reading Fairy Tale this long and fan service bugs you, you may need to not read this series anymore.
Go see a psychiatrist if you're still reading it and you don't like fan service for some reason.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's plenty of other reasons not to like a series. But with this, you know, with these volumes, I kind of really like the way it's playing out. He manages to have the shocking death of one of the characters, but at the same time, undo it in a way that actually works. You know, coming back at it from having read the chapters the first time, I think that this actually works for me. Seeing how Mashima uses the MacGuffin of time travel and everything. It just in the end, I think it, you know, it works in a way. It lets us have that dark moment of Gray dying, but at the same time having him still be around. So I think for me that's perfectly fine. I think that turned out pretty well. And so yeah, all right. Let's see. Okay, then. I think it is time. Oh, hey, look. This is funny. I'm looking at the Crunchyroll chapters, and the earliest chapter that they have available is chapter 334, which is the one we just went over.
Oh, what one?
334.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's kind of... Yeah, that's kind of neat.
Hmm.
Let's see, what else do we have? Alright, cool. Well, anyway, we got that. Let's see. Moving on.
Shall we?
Yes. Let us talk about the new series that we're going to go through all the way, but in this case we will actually finish it because it's a wee bit shorter than One Piece is. We're going to start talking about Attack on Titan.
And are you the food? No, we are the hunters.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not how that's meant to be translated, but
I don't know, but I don't want to say in German. I'll get messed up.
Yeah, well, this chapter, yeah, so this series, we're going to go through volumes 1 and 2. We're going to do 2 volumes a week on this one just to, you know, give me a little more time to buy the stupid one.
No, there's like 13 volumes anyway, right now.
It won't take very long, and I mean, of course, for a couple of these, we will have new volumes of manga coming out that need discussing. So, anyway. So, alright. Starting with Volume 1. Just a quick overview of what the story is about. Essentially, humanity was attacked by these creatures called Titans, who are basically these naked giants that their only goal is to eat humans. And so, they have to
kill them, basically, but then they eat them because it's more...
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah, we've got the main...
Terrifying than being eaten by something that's bigger than you.
Being eaten by something that's only a little bit bigger than you. Thank you very
much. Oh, yeah, that's more terrifying. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some moments where you see Titans that are only, like, twice as big as a human, and you're like, you can't get a human down in one bite, so you have to bite them to pieces, and that is awful. But, yeah, it is pretty horrifying, and... This series, it's the main characters are Eren, Mikasa, and Armin, who are these kids living in a city that's inside these massive walls that protect them from the Titans. But then a giant, massive, colossal Titan that's big enough to break the gate shows up and kicks the gate in. And then the Titans attack.
Attack on Titan.
Yeah, and so a lot of people get eaten, including Eren's mom, And they lose the outer wall. They have to retreat back to behind Wall Rose, which is the second wall.
Wait, which was the wall they lost? Wall Maria?
It was Wall Maria, yeah. And so, yeah. And then after that backstory, we skip forward to when Eren is grown up, or at least a teenager, and a member of the, you know, of the training, of the military. And then they get attacked by the Colossal Titan again, and it breaks the wall again into the small city, not the...
Dirt Titan.
Yeah, because the way...
Like, what's up, bro? Oh, crap. Damn. Yeah. That, there we go again.
Yeah, well, because the way the walls work are that they've got, you know, they've got these little sort of, like, smaller parts on the outside of the wall that are meant to attract the attention of Titans, you know, in case a Titan does break the wall, it, you know, it goes through one of the smaller areas so it doesn't break through the main wall, and they can seal off the gate, you know, with a more powerful gate on the inside or something, I guess. But, yeah, they get attacked, and then everyone starts getting eaten. All the people that we had gotten to know and love, and no, wait, actually, we didn't, because we...
For just a while.
We skipped the training sequence, which, if you watch the anime, you'll know that they go through the training first, so you actually get to know the characters. Well, here, it just jumps forward and has everyone start getting eaten, which, I think the way the anime did it worked a lot better, just in general, you know.
Oh, they're dead. Oh.
Yeah, you know, you get a little more invested in the characters before they start getting eaten.
I kind of already was invested in the characters before they start getting eaten.
Yeah, well, yeah, but then, and then...
Oh, it's a few of them.
Yeah, and then Eren gets eaten. Like, our main character, he just got chomped. He got gnawed.
Oh, that's why I stopped reading the series. I'm done here.
And I believe a lot of people, that was their reaction. Once they got through the first volume, they're like, you know what, F this, I'm done.
They're like, wait, the main character's dead? I'm done reading. I mean, he decided he wanted to kill the Titans, he wanted to kill them all, and then he gets eaten, saving his buddy that just stood there being, you know, I'm not useless, but just terrified. I can understand that, but still, it's like,
well, yeah.
Dude, the main character's died.
Do something, so yo.
It's like, when I read it, I was like, wait, so is Armin the main character now? What? I don't want to read this anymore. I just stopped, and I came back a year later, I was like, oh, wait, it's still going? Like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah, it was. It definitely was one heck of a twist, and I think a lot of people hated that, and stopped reading. And then, but I think a lot of them came back, you know, when everyone's like, no, yeah, trust me, it's good. But I do know that at least some people, a friend of mine, who thought that it would have been a lot more interesting if Eren had have stayed dead, and then the story was about Armin. But, oh yeah, well, spoilers. But we'll get into that in Volume 2. But, you know, if, you know...
That's why we're doing 2 volumes.
Yeah, a friend of mine did think that this would make for a much more interesting story overall. If the characters had actually, you know, if this was a twist in that Armin is the main character, not Eren. Eren was just a red herring. That, I think, would have been, you know... would have been really interesting.
Well, the funny thing about that was, I did read the chapter 0 of this.
Yeah, yes, that is, yes, I did read that too.
I was like, oh, I'm going to start to see some ideas that came into this at some point. It went into the final project of it. But yeah, if Armin was the main character, it would have been an interesting story, but then, you know, some series that are not manga did this and it turned out well, but only because people kept thinking that so-called character was a main character, but he wasn't.
Well, yeah.
The other guy was.
Well, yeah, there isn't really that many main characters in that series, but nonetheless, yeah, that... yeah, I think it certainly is. I think the thing with this is that for some people, the twist at the end of volume one was unsatisfying for some people liked it. And then the twist at the end of volume two, as we're going to get to that, is satisfying for some and unsatisfying for others. So, but yeah, we'll kind of get to that when we get to it, you know.
Still doesn't help that it became like one of the most popular manga to read, you know.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is quite
So
popular.
the people that they hate the so-called twist of Aaron dying doesn't really matter because
Yeah.
it got really popular. What's the point?
Indeed. All right, let's see. Yeah, but yeah, as far as Volume 1 itself goes, just on its own, yeah, I quite liked it. I do have to say that I like the way the anime tells the story better. But there is something to be said for, you know, I don't know. I have to say no. I'll have to stick with the anime did a better job of getting us introduced to the characters first, before we you know, before we started
I
killing
really
them
should
off.
watch it.
It is quite good. It is
It's
quite
only
good.
25 episodes, right?
Yeah, it is
Okay,
about
that shouldn't be
25,
a, that shouldn't be a
26.
problem. That
Yeah.
shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, it is. It's easy. It's an easy read.
No
I mean,
fillers, right?
what? No, yeah, no fillers.
Good, no fillers. I hate fillers. I mean, fillers are nice, but then, but it's like for me when it comes to fillers, I just because I don't like fillers. You know, in anime that's adapted from manga, even though I know it's, you know, the animating studios, you know, way of, you know, doing their own thing, it kind of, well, to me, it kind of feels like it destroys the creativity of the original series before it's even finished. Hence why Fullmetal Alchemist got a second chance at the anime adaptation of the manga without the fillers.
Right.
Well, except for a few fillers, but, you know, over this introduction in some way, and they cut some stuff out too, but still. I've only seen a few episodes of Brotherhood.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, that, I do have to say, overall, I think that I'd say it's a smarter move to get people introduced to characters before you start killing them, because
yeah.
With this, with just the manga, it does become very much it does introduce anyone can die, but at the same time, the people that are dying are people that we haven't been introduced to except for, you know, Eren. But, yeah. Let's talk about Volume 2 then, shall we?
Yes, Volume 2.
Yes, where with this one, we pretty much get, you know, get a focus on Mikasa and her backstory, where it turns out that her parents were killed and then she was kidnapped and she was going to be, you know, she was going to basically be sold into slavery, and, you know, it was going to be sex slavery because they're going on about how, oh, there's no Asians left. She's the her mother was the last one, and she's a half Asian, so now she's the
she's
last
a half breed.
Yes, but that was offensive, Mo. But no,
sorry.
But yeah, but you know, they're basically said, oh, there are people that would pay good money for her, and you just know that it's exactly for the reason of they want to have sex with an Asian, which is kind of disturbing, but whatever, this is a disturbing series, but fortunately...
Yeah, it was when I read, that's how
yeah.
That.
Yeah, fortunately, Mikasa is also a lunatic, so she murders them all, and... Yeah, and then
she wasn't the lunatic, it was Eren.
Well, Eren was a bit of a lunatic, but she's just better at being a killer. But yeah. And you've also got just a lot of scenes in this volume of, you know, the soldiers just succumbing to despair and saying, you know what? It was like, you know what? There's a Titan looking inside here, and I think he can see us, but clean my gun, and this one person's like, wait, what good is that gonna do? And then he just puts it in his mouth. You're like, oh, that's what.
Yeah. And then, like, you kind of ditched us, but yeah. I guess that worked.
Yeah, I think what...
Suicide is wrong, people.
Yes, it is. But, you know, I think what you've got, what's interesting here is then you got, you know, Mikasa and Jean, who are basically, you know, brought in. And again, a lot of these characters, like, don't know who they actually are because we haven't seen the, you know, the story of the training or anything like that, which comes later, so it is kind of like, what the heck is going on here? But, you know, we have, we kind of get to see how, you know, one of the main problems that they have is that none of these soldiers have, you know, these soldiers are going up against these horrifying monstrosities, but they don't have any proper leaders. you know, they don't have someone that just goes in and says, hey, follow me, we need to kill these titans. And even if when they do, they kind of have the problem of their leaders kind of tend to die as well. So, yeah. And then we got the introduction of the titan that is like this abnormal titan that's going around using human fighting techniques and killing other titans.
This titan looks like it can box or something. What the hell? I don't know what.
Yeah, it's like kickboxing and stuff. And it's, yeah, and of course you get, and you get some more scenes of people getting eaten, and you get to see how, you know, you get to see why I'm most terrified of the small titans, as one of them tries to put one of the soldiers' head in his mouth, but his mouth isn't quite big enough to fit the entire head. So I'm just like, and even though, yeah, it's like the only one that would be okay to be eaten by are the biggest ones. Because even the, just with body proportions, even the big ones don't quite have big enough mouths, you know?
So it'd be like a weird sort of sick game. It'd be like, okay, whoever can find the big one get eaten by it, well, as he suffered less. Whoever gets eaten by the smaller ones, well,
that's gonna suck. I don't know if, yeah.
Just run around trying to find the bigger ones get eaten by it.
Yeah, some of the large titans, the ones that you can, that, you know, that can fit you inside your mouth, you'd almost think that, okay, just let him put me inside his mouth, keep my limbs away from the teeth, and then just slide down and make sure I still have my swords so I can cut my way out. It just seems like, you know, it wouldn't be, I don't know, I mean, the swords can cut the titan flesh, so you'd think that they could somehow cut their way out. But that doesn't happen. But yeah, so. And then, let's see, after that, they go through and they say, hey, we need gas to get over the wall, so we need to go into this building, this basement that's filled with some of the smaller titans, and we're going to distract them with gunshot, and then everyone else is going to, the people that actually know how to, you know, properly kill titans will jump in and actually kill them by attacking their weak point.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, and of course you've got the moment where it's like, oh, they, you know, two of them, Connie and Sasha, kind of screw up, but then the Annie and Mikasa come and save them. So, all is well. And then they, as they're about to escape, they discover that the abnormal titan that was helping them is kind of being eaten by the other ones. And then he sees the one that killed the one that we first saw in Volume 1, who ate, Thomas?
Thomas?
Yeah, the one guy. Yeah, the first one that got caught. And then the abnormal titan kills that titan.
Well, was that Samuel? I'm not sure.
I think it was Thomas. Pretty sure. I'm not sure.
It's really sad we can't remember these guys because they only appeared for a bit and then they got eaten by titans. It's like, yeah. Man. I can see why the anime worked.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, and then you discover the big twist that Eren was inside the titan. In its neck, which, oddly enough, is the place where you need to attack to kill the titans. So, And then Mikasa runs up to him and realizes, hey, it's actually him. So she, yeah, kind of has a bit of a breakdown because she didn't allow herself to have a breakdown earlier when she found out that Eren was dead. And now seeing that he's alive, she is understandably relieved. So, yeah, I have to say, yeah, that's that for Volume 2. So... yeah, what do we think of the series overall now? I mean, just in the first two volumes, how do we feel?
Okay, I'm gonna put it like this: how I when I first read past chapter 4 and onward. I want to know more.
Yes.
I want to know more. You give me these things. I want to know more. I don't want to stop reading it.
Yeah. Well, we will discover more as we go along.
That's exactly, I think that's probably why the series worked so well for a lot of people, because it wasn't giving everything out, it was giving, like, some things, and heck, with the first chapter title, what was it, is it to you in from 2,000 years now or something, like,
yeah.
Wait, what kind of title is that?
Yeah, there's a lot. I'm like,
holy, wait, so it takes, like, 2,000 years from our time, or 2,000 years, or 2,000 years in another alternate timeline, or... I don't know, but it's totally about 2,000 years. So it kind of gives you a hint of, like, was humankind being attacked by time for, like, the last 2,000 years?
It is.
Damn.
It's an interesting, it is an interesting question. And there's a lot of questions that this series raises, which is kind of what makes it so appealing to want to keep reading. And as far as the horror elements go, I have to say at first I was like, oh, geez, this is depressing. And at first I was like, oh, everyone's dying. But then as I got through the series more, I started realizing, okay, there are certain characters that are pretty much safe, you know. I mean, there are some that die or that this early on that do die, but after we get through the story that we're in right now, we'll kind of know which ones are more or less off limits, or at least so far. So we'll kind of have to see where things go from here. But I have to say, I do like how these two volumes read together, because we got the... I mean, it would be nice to know more about the characters, and that, like I said, the anime did that better. Oh, geez, why did I say that? No, having it, just the way the story goes, with Eren dying in the end of the first volume and then him reappearing at the end of the second volume, it really kind of works for me, you know? It's just that kind of the flow with the story. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but yeah, overall, I don't know, yeah. Do you have any other
questions? It just keeps raising questions to make me want to read more. That's how One Piece got me into. I mean, at first it was interesting, but then it was like, okay, some things, it's like, One Piece is entertaining, and it had just pointed some stuff out to me, and when I reread, I'm like, oh, I didn't know this, but with the time, there's just so many answers you just want to know. It's kind of like some other non-manga series I can think of, like, you know, just Evangelion, like, about how the angels came to be, like, what the heck they came from, mm-hmm. You know, people kept watching for that reason. I mean, it's the curiosity that I think made this series popular and kept it going. Because if you throw everything out to the open, I mean, not just everything, if you just throw all the main stuff and, like, the stuff that you want to keep under wraps, then the series clearly is going to end soon, or your author just clearly didn't know what the heck they were doing. It just helped.
I do have to say that I do think that this series, it does raise a lot of questions, and we will.
Good questions, not bad questions.
Also, some questions where it's like, how the hell did you think of this? But, yeah, it's. Yeah, well, we'll kind of have to see.
Oh, he's a Shadow of Colossus.
Yeah.
It's like, what if these things were actually human beings, like giant, gigantic humanoid beings that ate mm-hmm. people?
Yeah.
I got something here.
that certainly is one. I don't know. I enjoy it. It's definitely a fun series. It definitely makes you want to read more. You know, whether it be the question of who survives, who dies, or whether it be the question of what the hell. You know. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah.
What do you think of the art though? Compared, you know, the humans compared to the Titans. Because I remember you saying that, I think it was off the air anyways, but it was something about, like, how, you know, like, with the art, it's a little hard to, you know, tell the Titans from the humans sometimes.
Nah, not in this one. In the actual series, it's very clear which ones are Titans and which ones are humans.
Okay.
But you've got, in the one-shot that I guess Isayama took to Jump, the art was kind of pretty awful, and I mean, yeah, looking at the art in these first volumes, you kind of look at it and people are like, oh, the art isn't very good, you know, and it's certainly a very, very rough style, it's not very polished, but at the same time, anyone that thinks that the art in Attack on Titan looks bad, go find the original Chapter Zero, the one-shot. You will suddenly understand why Shonen Jump turned this guy down. And you will appreciate the art in Attack on Titan so much more.
I appreciate it now.
I mean, yeah, as it is right now with the actual Attack on Titan series, it's kind of, there are times when I'm leaning, thinking, okay, is this art bad or is it experimental? You know, because there are plenty of manga out there that have art that, looking at it, you think, what the heck? This is awful. But it's meant to be like, you know, sort of art house kind of manga. Like, you know, more artsy, more indie comic kind of art, which just kind of makes you think, it's like, okay, very interesting. It's a different approach. But then you start with a lot of those sort of like indie styles, you start wondering, okay, how much of this is them actually trying out a different art style for the sake of art, or how much is them trying to look different from mainstream comics? You know, because Attack on Titan certainly doesn't look like mainstream manga. But the question is, if he could draw like mainstream manga, would he? Or is this deliberate? Is the roughness of the art meant to deliberate because it's, you know, because this is kind of a rough, non-polished world that they live in? It, the use of an art style that doesn't look polished kind of lends itself to the idea that this is a world that is not, that is unlike anything that you're used to. You know, this is not a place that you as a manga reader are meant to feel comfortable in, and thus by doing as much as he can to make it seem alien and unfamiliar, including using an art style that just doesn't look like anything that you're used to the point where you're questioning, okay, is this good art, is it bad art, or what's going on? It kind of puts you in that position of being out of your comfort zone, which is kind of what the manga wants. And so that's kind of what I feel, at least that's how I feel, you know, just in general, that's kind of how I feel that is his approach. It might just be that he's a bad artist and that he got lucky with, you know, that we can draw that conclusion from the art. But he certainly has improved compared to his original one shot, which was pretty awful.
Yeah, it was. So,
yeah.
I mean, that one shot was just weird too. It was like, why? I was like, okay, I can see why he went with
indeed
what he has now compared to what he had then. And it's not just art. I mean, like, just the stuff in general.
Yeah. Definitely a series worth reading, and I have to say, a lot. Anyone that is listening to this and that stopped reading after volume one, sorry, spoilers, but it is definitely worth reading at least to volume two.
Yeah, for the record, I was one of those who stopped reading after volume one before it became popular because I thought it was going the way I thought it was going to go, and then I got back into it a year later. When I found it on my own, I was like, wait a sec, what? And then I was like, oh, not bad.
Yeah. But
I'm used to seeing things get eaten. You know, to be honest, when it comes to seeing things get eaten in, like, drawings, it works for me. When it comes to, like, movies and visuals, like, you know, moving, it does, I don't, especially if it's real people, not, like, it just, you know how you don't like blood, I don't like people being eaten.
Unless
it's for comedic purpose, then fine.
I don't know how I could ever see anyone being eaten for comedic purposes. I'm not sure how that works.
Well, it could work.
Yeah.
They go, oh my god, the monitor. Well, he's dead. Ah, laugh. Like, what?
Yes. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
But I'm just not as perturbed by that as much as I thought it used to be.
Yeah, I suppose so. I don't know. I have to say, overall, I could do without people getting eaten in manga, but this is certainly works.
It's the premise of the series. You eat or get eaten.
Yeah. Well, it's just in general, I mean, I'm saying, yeah, I could probably... Normally, in any other circumstances, I would be like, you know, wouldn't really be that interested in this. But I have to say, it is quite enjoyable. It certainly is a different take on manga. And it's a lot easier to read if you just decide, okay, look, approach this from a Game of Thrones point of view. Everyone can die, so don't be sad when they do. That's just what the author wants.
What? Say it again?
Don't be dead. Don't be sad when people die, because that's just what the author wants.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the series people just die. except the main character.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty odd. I mean, I think there was a series we read where, okay, it's one of those rare series where the characters, where the main characters were introduced one after another, but then they end up dying, and some of them actually get away, but then most of them end up dying. It's like, and then there's like up to a certain chapter, and I was like, wait, the heck? I thought that was the main. Oh, I thought I'm done reading, but I kept reading anyway.
Yeah.
It was that one series. I don't want to mention the name because there's no point mentioning it. You'll find it when, if you remember this description where, you know, everyone goes through this certain thing, and then some of them get out, some of them don't, but usually most people don't even get out alive anyway. And then hopefully that little hint will help you find that series. Because I don't want to mention the name.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Derek wants me to tell it.
I don't care.
I thought so.
Yeah, all right. Well, I think that's a good place to stop for now. Yeah, so this week, all right, so that's been Fairy Tail 39 and Attack on Titan Volumes 1 and 2. For next week, let's see, we're just going to be doing Attack on Titans Volumes 3 and 4. We've got Nisekoi Volume 4 coming out on the 1st. However, since the 1st is like, oh, what is that? That's a Tuesday, and we do the recording on Monday, so we say, but, you know, that's not enough time for us to get the volume and actually read it all. So that will be, Nisekoi will be for the following week when we do volumes 5 and 6 of Attack on Titan. And then the week after that will be the release of, and then the week that we do Nisekoi will be the release of Seven Deadly Sins Volume 3 and Ranma and a Half Volume 3. So we'll do that the following week after that. So we might do just those three volumes then, but I'm not certain, you know, because maybe we can do a bit more. I'd like to get through Attack on Titan, but then again, two volumes, technically three volumes of manga in 1 week is a bit much, is already plenty. But
yeah.
So that's kind of the plan for now. Let's go ahead and move on to the next segment. It's time for the chapter commentaries for the week. And starting off with the return of One Piece with chapter 750. Jeez.
Yep.
Yep. So we start off with a color page with pretty much all Luffy, Zoro, Law, and all of the gladiators that are, you know, joined together to take down Doflamingo.
Almost reminds me of the Supernova with the 11 and all that. Like, how many are there?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 I counted just now.
Dang!
So, but yeah, a little bit like that. It also reminds me a little bit of the group Luffy got together during Impel Down and Marineford.
Yeah.
So, it's a nice color page.
Luffy really has the power to just band people together and just whatever.
Yeah, that is true. It certainly looks interesting. Also, I kind of want to point out that Cavendish is possibly the one time that we've seen, one of the few times that we've seen a character with hair that isn't shaded in One Piece and actually guessed his hair color properly.
I figured he would be blonde.
Yeah, but you know, exactly, that's the thing. Anytime you see someone with hair that isn't colored in, you always think, oh, they're probably blonde, and then it turns out they're not.
They're actually black. Wait, what? How the hell?
Yeah, no, that's never happened. But you know, often it will be like blue or green or some color like that.
Orange.
Or red. But, red. Well, yeah, that's the weird thing. Nami's hair isn't colored in, and yet Shanks's is. Their hair colors are only a couple shades different. Not sure what's up with that. But anyway, let's talk about the chapter itself. So,
maybe orange is lighter than red. I mean, red is the brightest color.
Well, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, so this chapter was... It was all right.
I agree.
You know, it's like, it wasn't one of the greatest chapters. It felt kind of like, more like, let's go and, set up where everyone is. You know, it wasn't really telling one specific story. It was more, let's just spend a page or two on each group, if that, really, you know. But I did enjoy the scene where Rebecca, you know, where Rebecca sees Viola. So somehow I'm guessing that she probably knew. Well, somehow something tells me that she knows that Viola is her aunt, and that Viola probably approached her at some point during, you know, when she was working for Doflamingo about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I have to say I'm kind of surprised that Viola has turned out to legitimately be one of the good guys, because I was kind of expecting her to, you know, for it to turn out that, oh, she's actually a bad guy again. You know, the whole, oh, I'm a good guy. No, wait, I'm a bad guy. No, wait, I'm a good guy. And I was almost expecting that it would just go with the momentum, and then next thing we knew, she's a bad guy again.
Mm.
So, yeah, although...
But there's too many for a straw hat to face anyway.
Yeah, although it is... I don't know, yeah, it is kind of interesting seeing the, you know, when you look at, on this page, when you look at her and Robin, and you kind of look at the two and you're just like, hold on, maybe you shouldn't have given Robin such long hair, because she's looking like a lot of other women that you're drawing, or maybe you just really like women with long black hair.
Or I like women with long black hair.
I know, but it just makes it just that little bit harder for the character to stand out, you know, like with the haircut that she had before, it wasn't a typical long haircut, you know, it was more just, you know, it was a short hair, but it helped the character design stand out. With her current design, she doesn't stand out as much. It's kind of weird.
Oh, Robin?
Yeah.
Mm.
But, okay, yeah, and we also, I don't know, we have a weird moment where King Rico is like, oh, it was like, how can we trust, we can't trust these pirates. And then, yeah, and then it's like,
Rebecca's okay. Like, I don't trust the world government anymore. I'd rather believe in them. Like,
yeah, the weird thing is that it doesn't make sense for King Riku to have this opinion, because, I mean, he's been shown as the kind of person to, you know, look for the worth of someone beyond their current circumstance, you know, or their past. So
that's why Kiro is the way he is, because
mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like, you know, King Riku, he obviously doesn't care about someone's past, because otherwise he wouldn't have let Kiros marry his daughter.
Uh-huh.
So it just seems kind of weird for him to be the person, and it makes it seem like, you know, the entire point of this is for Oda to once again say the people in power are bad, and so-called justice, and, you know, true justice is what you do, not what you say, or whatnot, you know, and, you know, the ruling class are bad, and things like that, and it feels like he's putting the message that he's trying to get across above the story that he should be telling, and the characters he should be writing, because it really just, it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't feel right.
I read that part of it. I was like, why is he saying this stuff? I mean, I know they're pirates. I understand that, but why is he saying this stuff?
Yeah, it certainly doesn't make sense. And it's
very... I mean, how do you know that these pirates may have killed people when you've actually let the guy who has probably killed lots of people,
mm-hmm.
live and marry a daughter?
Yeah, it's very clear, it stands out a lot, and it is very clearly just there for the sake of, you know, having Viola, you know, just monologue.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The big
yeah.
message that Oda has been trying to put through in his work. So that feels poorly written, honestly. But
it happens, he just got off on the break, give him a break.
Yeah. Though, yeah, and it's also kind of weird how Viola is like, I found the key. It's like, where did you find it? Why on earth was it there?
Where did she find the key?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's the thing with One Piece nowadays. There's so many panels, things happen off screen, we don't see it, which is nice, because we don't see everything, but...
Well, yeah, but at the same time, how was the key there, you know? I mean,
they was lying moved. Right next to Law. It was just lying right next to Law after Luffy picked them up and carried them off.
Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense because
I'm just joking about
they're
it.
So far away from where they were before when Law was locked up. How did the key end up right here? Did it fall down the front of her dress or something and she only just found it now? I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense, that it fell down. I guess that she found it on her clothes somewhere, because there's no way in heck that the stupid key could possibly have followed them.
Yeah, keys have a strange place in One Piece. They just do.
Yeah.
You know how.
Well, yeah. But look, just watch. It's going to turn out that the only thing keeping the thing that was making Oda a great writer was his tonsils.
Yep.
The moment he gets them removed, suddenly it's like, "Durr, how do I write?"
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm just hoping that this is caused by him, you know, starting writing again after 2 weeks of, you know, resting after having gone through a stressful surgery, which I'm hoping that it's just him not thinking things through completely, because this is, yeah.
Not oh, correct. Well, let's have her tonsils taken out, and she did a lot better in school because of it, so.
Interesting.
It's more that, you know, it's like I said, you know how Oda takes his break sometimes and he comes back for me? Whenever he comes back from a break, one or two of his chapters after he comes back from a break aren't so great, because I'm like, you know, I'm giving him a chance to, like, you know, pick up the pace again.
Yeah, we'll see what happens next chapter. I mean, it just seems kind of odd that there's a couple things about this chapter that just don't work. There's also, like, some parts here where the art looks a little weird, like the one where she's saying, they are the lawless ruffians who will destroy this country's sham of peace. The way her eye is positioned on her face from that view, and the fact that you can see her eyelashes from the other side of her face, makes it look like her eyes are, like, one side of her face, the eyes are squashed in or something, and the other ones kind of bulge out from that angle, because it's very clearly from the side and not meant to be from, like, a slight angle, so it looks a bit weird.
Let's just say Oda's still recovering.
Pretty much, but yeah, I am noticing some moments here and there that are a bit weird.
I mean, just to go off topic, Hunter Togashi kind of has, like, his weird chapter sometimes, too, like, before his super long hiatus.
Well, yeah, but we'll see what happens next.
Oh, between and stuff, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, let's go ahead and...
Naruto.
Yeah, one sec.
Drink some water.
Yeah.
And make sure you try and, like, keep your room cool.
Yeah. Alright, chapter 681, Kaguya's Tears. And, jeez.
My tears, more exact.
This was stupid. I mean,
basically, everything was premeditated by the Black Zetsus.
Yeah, it turns out that he's the third son of her third son, and I'm just like, jeez, what the heck is up with this family's genetics? At least your other kids somewhat look like her. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's basically the revelation of this is all the things that happened, and I'm just sitting here, it's like, this all involves things that was revealed within the last 2 years out of this series' runtime. I'm having a very hard time being invested at all. And yeah, I honestly, let's just be fair here. There is absolutely no possible way any chapters of Naruto will not be stupid as long as this plot continues. I mean, it's just impossible.
Well, I can conclude that this isn't the final arc. The final arc is the arc after this.
Probably. If this is the final arc, then without a doubt, I will say this was stupid.
And I'm not going to bother paying for it.
Yeah, no, not a chance. Well, we're all
technically already are. That means you can't review them, too.
But there are library books.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Anyway, I really don't want to talk about this.
There should be book rental online anyway. But yeah, moving on to another, to a better series than this, that, you know, Hunter Hunter.
Hunter Hunter, chapter 344. And...
excuse me.
I'm going to let you talk about this because I really don't have anything to say because I have no idea what's going on. Though I will see on the double page spread where we see what the what the rest of the world looks like. I swear, it looks like it looks like what Toriko would look like if it was drawn by the artist that does Berserk.
Really?
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, crazy monsters and everything,
and oh.
with that style that focuses heavily on lines and inking, it looks a lot like the art that you'd see behind was it Kentaro Miura, the one that does Berserk?
Kentaro Miura. Oh wait, you're talking about Hunter x Hunter's art?
Yeah, the art right here on the page where you see all the monsters eating each other.
Yeah, that's true. I remember that. I'm like. Basically, it's like the reason why is because. Hang on, loading the page. This place is too big.
And then
Toriko, go back to the drawing board. You're not compared to this.
Yeah, well, when you when you look at the scale, they have some creatures that look very much like elephants, and then you've got everything else that is just freaking ginormous,
and they're eating stuff that's just as big as them or there's a walrus thing eating a freaking dinosaur thing.
Yeah, it's like eating looks like a T-Rex.
No, it's a hippo monster thing eating a T-Rex.
Yeah, and then you've got like a sandworm kind of thing eating a weird eight-legged dragon looking thing.
Yeah, and then there's that weird giant
elephant.
And there's that weird giant bug that I swear resembles that giant bug at the in the third part of the Twilight Realm of Twilight Princess. Yeah, that thing. I'm like, oh god, that thing.
A little bit, yeah.
That thing scared my little sister. She's like, I don't want to play it. I'm like, okay, I'll kill it for you.
And it looks like it is eating an elephant. So
it's eating. They're like little elephants now. Oh my goodness, these things are huge. I wonder how.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure. I mean, they don't look entirely like elephants. There are some differences with it, like having multiple ears and the tusks and the trunk being a little short compared to what an elephant normally looks like.
Oh yeah,
but I'm pretty sure the fact that they look like elephants is meant to be there as a, you know, just as a size comparison.
But I think the hippo thing is scarier than all of them because it's a hippo.
Well, I don't know, that thing that's giant worm.
Of course, a giant worm thing is always the scariest because it's came from underground, man. Yeah.
It could even eat the hippo thing, so. But
And then there's three pictures of the three that pretty much went there and saw it, and I don't know who the third one is because I read a bit. I know who Netero is.
Mm-hmm.
I know who. Okay, I don't really know who that is. But the last one, I don't know who that is at all.
Well, obviously she's going to be introduced later. But, yeah, other than that, I don't really feel like I can really comment on the chapter that much because I really do not know what's going on.
Yeah, you don't. All I can say is the Dark Continent looks a lot like, reminds me of Australia, but way more dangerous.
Yeah, this is a series that I'm going to need to be caught up on.
Really,
I really should try to see if I can. I should see if I can do that before this coming Monday, so I actually know what's going on. But we'll see. And so,
there are like 300-ish, 340 chapters to go through. So
yeah, man, I need the air conditioner on up here. It's getting hot.
Just be prepared to see the art change from like good to decent to what the heck to decent to what the heck has happened here to decent to. Yeah, just to prepare for the art to change a lot because...
You could have just said that.
Of Togashi's.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. All right, let's move on to Nisekoi, chapter 127, The King.
And right.
Yeah, this is... you see, there's a reason that Shu is in this series, and this chapter is why. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm just studying. It's like, oh yeah, it's just Yui and me. Here and then he's like, "Oh!" He sends a message to all the other girls and hijinks ensue.
Snap! it's like twitch, snap! Like what the heck?
Yeah, and yeah, I think the faces for this chapter are certainly well. You've got Shu's face as he just with that grin. You've got Marika's face as she's like ran all the way there. It's like just furious. You've got, let's see, you've got, let's see what else, which other one was there? Yeah, the faces while they're playing the king game. And you've got,
Tsugumi's.
Yeah, Tsugumi, just Tsugumi and Marika's. And it's like, he like spies on Raku's, you know, stick, and he's like, ah, he's number one, all right, number one. You
really
must kiss
one.
The king. And then it turns out that Tsugumi has number one, and Raku had number seven. His finger was covering part of it.
Okay. This part, at the point, how the heck did Marika get that wrong? Because
with
the
way, an angle, yeah.
I know it's at an angle, but at the same time, I mean, it's basically the way people use the way I usually write one and seven is I differentiate by like writing like a little line.
That's why you do
something.
It.
That's why you do. Otherwise, it's like is that one or a seven? I'm sure it's a seven. So it's one. So it's 7-7. Okay. No, that's actually 1-7. You went to the wrong room. Now you're dead.
Yep. And I do love this. It's like kissy kissy. Do it.
Yuri. Oh.
Yeah, and it's you just got the girls like no, and yeah, and of course Tsugumi just.
That's the best face.
yeah, that is easily the best face of the chapter, where she's just like, "This is I've never kissed anyone." He's like, "Yes, but poor Tsugumi." He's like, "Aw."
And she's like,
starts sobbing.
She's got a sign that says, "Excuse."
Yeah, he's like, "Ma, mistress." And yeah, and Marco's like, "This is really annoying. Would it have really been that bad?" And then it turns out that the next king is Yui, and everyone's like, "Ah, crap, what's she going to do?"
Well,
So,
don't know.
Yes, we will find out next week.
So, on, I mean,
not Dragon Ball Z, you moron. Yep, and
Decoy Z, I mean.
Yep. All right then. Well, it is time to move on to Stealth Symphony Chapter 17.
Yep.
I don't know, we continue pulling the whole, oh hey, look, what actually happened? Oh, Jig is insane.
Yes, he's clearly insane. Yeah. But the thing is, the director, she said that it's not really a dragon heirloom, it is an heirloom, but it was cursed by a dead sorcerer.
Yeah. And also, I want to point out that
the life force system cursed by dead sorcerer.
Yeah. Well, I also want to point out that this, the police chief is quite possibly the most ridiculous part of this series. Because, I mean, it's like,
she didn't need to be there at all.
No, she
didn't. Here at all.
And the thing is the story, the story draws her with this massive cleavage that would make Matsumoto from Bleach, like, try and, you know, pour her shirt closed. And yet she's taken as seriously and meant to be come across as a character kind of like, oh, I don't know, Olivier Armstrong from Fullmetal Alchemist. Now imagine, would you have taken that character seriously had she worn a miniskirt and had her shirt open so that her boobs were hanging out all the time? And, oh, by the way, her boobs are like five sizes larger than they are in the actual Fullmetal Alchemist manga. Would you have taken that character seriously?
No.
No, you would not. Nor would anyone.
You have still a crush on her, though?
No. Well, maybe when I was younger, when I was first reading that series. But by now, it's just, okay, look, that's just blatant and ridiculous. I mean, you can't have a character. One, what the hell kind of society is okay with their police chief dressing like a dominatrix? Or any of their, actually all the cops look like they dress like some kind of fetishism group.
Well, I don't know why I'm back. I don't know why I'm trying to back this up, but you know, you remember the part when Master appeared and she said that she, you know, that she came from a different world. Like I said, stuff something could probably just find people come from different worlds, and I don't know how to name them. She came from the world of busty police women.
It's a stupid world.
The police women.
No, but seriously, I mean, this is just such blatant fan services that I'm like, wow, I think back on all the blatant fan service characters that I've been okay with, like Matsumoto from Bleach, or Tsunade from Naruto, or what's her face from Blue Exorcist?
Oh, Shura.
Shura, that's it. I thought it was an Ura sound. No, but yeah, Shura. But you know, all these other characters that are these blatant fan service characters, and yet at the same time they have, you know, serious moments in the story, and I'm okay with it, but for some reason this one is just so blatant and over the top that I don't know, it does kind of feel weird where I'm like, okay, why is this one okay? You know? Like, out of all the fan service characters, why is this one the one that breaks the straw that breaks the camel's back, you know?
For you, that is.
Yeah, for me. Breaks her back, too, I can imagine.
Look, she's actually folding her arms under her boobs.
It's probably because those things weigh a ton. And she's like, I can do this. I can stand in this pose that just unfortunately happens to be suggestive. Or I could stand and my back breaks.
She's standing in front of a bunch of old, possibly dragon men.
No, seriously. I don't think there's any possible about it. But
Nothing can go wrong, sure.
I would actually think it would be absolutely hilarious if they if they actually tried to pull the, no wait, there's a good reason for why she seems so hypersexualized. Namely, one, okay, she's standing like that. Why is she standing like that? Because it's the only way to support her breasts and not have her back snap in two. Why does she have such massive cleavage showing? Why doesn't she button up her shirt? I could just see her being like, this is the largest size that I could find. It still doesn't fit. It would kind of, I don't know, it would be, it's kind of like what they do with the manga Kangoku Gakuen, where they they have the vice president, and there's actually a certain point where, you know, she's the one with the big breasts, and she has her shirt undone all the time, and it's in massive fan service. But then they have a part in the story where the underground student council president punishes her by making her button up her shirt. And it causes her physical pain because it is just too tight. And I'm just thinking, that's kind of hilarious in a way. That manga is surprisingly hilarious. Even though it is massively perverted, it's also very hilarious.
And vulgar.
Yes, very much so. But it's also funny. It's a comedy. It really is. But nonetheless, with this manga, I would laugh if that was the case. But it just seems weird where I'm saying, oh, this character is, you know, oh, she's going too far. But then at the same time, I'm like, yeah, but what about, say, for example, Tsunade, who usually often has some kind of cleavage, not as massive as this one. But when she was first introduced, the majority of the comments by other characters were about her massive breasts. And I'm thinking, okay, why do I take her seriously, but not this one? Well, you want to know why?
She hasn't had any character development.
Precisely. Thank you, Psychic.
I'm sorry for yelling, but
No. That's fine. Thank you, Psychic Mo. But nonetheless, see, that's the thing. Stupid cheesecake fan service character designs can be forgiven as long as there's more to the character. It's still stupid, but as long as there, I mean, you know, there's a difference between a character that's very curvy and very busty, and yet, and wears clothes that don't look like bondage gear, and yet still there's like an inevitable sexualization of the character because, I mean, man looks at character with big breasts, doesn't matter what she's wearing, instantly it's sexy, you know? Like, for example, a character could be wearing a very modest sweater, but if she has big breasts, the male looks at it and says, ooh, that is a very sexual sweater. Case in point, Velma from Scooby-Doo, as I'm sure many would agree with me. You know, it's like except for the fact that she's wearing a short skirt, I'm pretty sure most guys would agree that she's kind of sexy. And yet at the same time, she wears a sweater that completely covers her form, yet at the same time, that's part of the appeal. Thus,
I can never tell with the old cartoons. Well, I just watched the show because it was fun to watch.
With the old cartoons, yeah, but I think later versions. But nonetheless, you know, there are certain cases where a character with big breasts will inevitably become sexualized by the readers that are attracted to big
eventually,
breasts.
Eventually, they will, no matter what.
Yes, but there is a difference between that and this. It also helps when the characters actually have proper development I don't know. It's just there's some kind of a disconnect between we're meant to take this character seriously, yet at the same time she's the most fan service character I've ever seen. And that's even taking into account that I've forgiven it on other characters. So, but nonetheless,
Okay, last bit about the chapter. Since it's titled Part 3 about that man's invisibility.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, his character would work because, you know, the whole point is like, you know, he is nothing. He is empty. He accepts everything. And it feels like, you know, that could work, but we just haven't gotten enough time with him. We haven't gotten enough that about him to like him such that, because you more time needs to be spent making us like him so that we can actually feel conflicted when he says, oh, hey, I'm going to protect this guy that I'm meant to protect, even while he's trying to kill my friend. You know? We have to see it. It has to be shown in the story exactly how much this character trait, this emptiness, is part of his character. If all we get is the narrator saying, oh, he's empty, he accepts everything equally, then, you know, instantly, you know, it's not, there's a difference between being told something and being showed something. When you're told something, you react and you say, no, hey, wait a minute, I don't agree with what you say. But when you see something, it's evidence, you know. Even if it's coming from the same person, the writer, there's a difference between the writer saying, this person is empty, so he accepts everyone equally, even those trying to murder his friends, versus that same writer taking the character and showing in the story.
Show, don't tell.
Exactly. This is a good example of one of the basic tenets of writing that this person got wrong. And the fallout of that is, he comes across as a massive asshole.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like, you know, I mean, because see, there's the problem. We haven't had enough time with him. We haven't seen enough of him that to like. We haven't ever seen really properly. I mean, it's been...
Again, I've been on some sites and forums where people say, oh, so something's great. She has the potential to keep going. No, it does not.
This is a terrible series. It really is.
But it needs to be cut.
It really does. This is awful. And I just... Maybe it does have potential, but it's been so mishandled just from the very beginning that...
It did have potential.
There's no going anywhere with this, you know? But nonetheless, it's... I don't know. It's like this idea could have worked. But it's just every time you see him...
I believe it really could have worked. It's just that the problem was the character, there was very lack of character development. And when there was, it was just so small and not even enough. And then it focused on other characters that somehow get introduced and we don't really care about because we want to know about the other characters. It's like starting Bleach, Ichigo's introduced, Riga's introduced, of course, and all of a sudden it jumps into, I don't know, Kenpachi. What the heck?
Yeah.
And then it goes to Soul Reaper, and all of a sudden Ichigo and Rukia are forgotten, and then brought back once in a while. It's like, wait, what the heck's going on?
Oh, you mean the way... you mean the way Bleach actually is right now?
Yes. That's what I mean. That's why I hate Bleach.
Yeah, it's this... Yeah, like, but... we're still on Stealth Symphony.
No.
The thing with this series is that it's just. I mean, I've already said exactly what the problem is.
Okay, it's got the problem that Nura had. Too many characters.
Too many characters. Yes. Not enough time focusing on the main characters. So Jigs being insane doesn't mean anything to me. I never saw him not insane except for like maybe a couple chapters. That was it.
Just looking for a job. I'm trying to find a job.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like Troma, he's there's nothing to his character. That's his character.
He's a neutral person.
But yeah, at the same time, it is kind of like, okay, fair enough, but again, you haven't given me enough to care about him. All you've been doing is saying, oh, he's empty, he accepts everything. Well, don't just, we needed more time with that concept. And I mean, that's ultimately what the problem is. Like, it did show it a little bit, but it was always preceded by the narrator explaining it. Like, he doesn't trust the readers to, to pay attention, and I don't blame him, because, I mean, there's nothing in here that, that deserves to be paid attention to. But let's move on to Bleach, chapter
I mean,
585.
okay, so let me
Oh, yeah.
finish up. I mean, with the last page, what the author could have done was take out the panel where it says Troma's Rod Yabba's name, whatever, and then just take out the narration part. That's it. And then we'll just understand, okay, we get it. That'd be fine. But the narration, I see with Toriko, I hate the narration at first, but it worked because it explained. Oh my god, Madagabomb. Don't give me Madagabomb. That thing
Yeah.
just narrates itself.
Yeah, it's like if you're writing a manga and you feel the need to have a narrator, stop. The moment you start thinking, "Oh, I'm going to have a narrator," you're doing it wrong. I mean, I know it can happen, it can be done sometimes, but nonetheless, if your first impulse is to use a narrator, you need to rethink what you're doing.
And you know what would be funny? If it turns out the narrator in Torgo was actually so-called God, I'd be like laughing so hard. It's like, oh, he was narrating the whole time.
That might be interesting. But
Like, and then I got eaten. Okay.
I don't think they
Fine.
I don't think that's how they think of God in that series. I don't think that's how he's meant to be, but nonetheless, let's move on to Bleach.
Chapter 585, at least it's in the very first page.
I have to say, this didn't take very long. Like, the moment Ichigo shows up, he doesn't even get a fight. Instantly, the big bad guy's like, "You moron, you led me right where I wanted to go." And so, it's like, good gosh. But yeah, and then, of course, the group of people fight him, and it's. At first, he's able to, dodge them and whatnot, but then when he's overwhelmed, his friends come to help him. And I think they're still outnumbered. There's six of them and, like, eight of the Sternritter, so.
Two more are gonna appear out of nowhere. I'm guessing Yachiru at some point, and
Hopefully.
who else? Yachiru, and I'm trying to think who else we have not.
Unohana?
When the Hana-sama comes back, I'm not dead. Wait, what?
I mean, are we honestly expecting anything else?
Maybe.
Of course she's gonna show up and be all, "No, I'm not actually dead." So,
And Bunny's like, I just lied.
yeah, he's like, when I said she was dead, and I meant unconscious, and when I said I killed her, I meant I ask your parents. He's like, "I'll tell you when you're older." I'm like 5,000 years old. Like, yeah, well, I'll tell you when you're older. How old will I have to be? A million. But yeah, it was
Dang
not.
it, Batman.
Yeah, it was an all right chapter, you know.
Yeah.
It was okay.
I mean, it's Bleach being Bleach. Fair enough.
Yeah, it. I
Stuff
honestly
that
don't
we can
have much
talk
to
about.
say about it. It was okay. We're just kind of middle of the road. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's just like that's the problem with long-running series is that eventually you get to the point where they've done all the big last-page reveals of all the allies. I mean, this has happened several times. And so, I'm not impressed. But
The
moving
problem
on.
with Bleach is that it didn't work on building its world enough that Kubo decided to go, I'll just go with it.
It did well with the characters, but the world building was a little lacking, yeah.
Yeah.
But.
I guess this is where plot actually matters in this case. Oh my god. Really.
It really is. I mean, it's a balance. You have to strike a balance. But anyway, One Punch Man, Chapter 35, Part 2, Boros' True Strength. where Saitama freaking jumps from the moon.
They're like, oh, the moon thing, that was nothing. Like, wait.
He's going to be thrown out of orbit. Yeah, it... Yeah, and then him and Boros fight some more, and he punches Boros a lot. Consecutive normal punches.
He's like, consecutive normal punches. It's like, wow, you know, this is exactly it. If people just, yeah. You know, the thing Luffy calling it that. Instead of, Gatling gun and all that. Gomu-gomu-no! Consecutive normal punches.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of name is that? It's so boring. Throw the enemy off and then he'll beat them up. Maybe that's the idea.
Yeah.
Boros is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Still dead.
Yeah, definitely it. Yeah, I have to say, yeah, this series really shouldn't be an action series. It's like, it really should be it really should just be a comedy. I don't see, but I don't know.
Take a look. One, he's the one that decided to go with this route.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense because.
I mean, he's like, oh, superhero. What's superhero do? Fight bad guys. Okay, we'll turn to action series. No, doesn't work.
Yeah,
you see, because like Thomas, kind of like Superman without a weakness, without the ability to fly, but without a weakness too. I haven't seen a weakness from him.
It really is. I don't know. It's just the big problem. Like I said, the big problem is that he's a character that works good in a comedy, not in an action series. So, I don't find it very interesting. But, alright, let's see. Moving on. Let's see. The next one is Yu-Gi-Oh! We're not reading that.
Not reading that.
Alright, well, that's the end of those chapters. Let's talk about... Let's see. What's the next one? Assassination Classroom?
Chapter 91,
excellent. Let me pull that up. See what happens in this one again.
Okay, basically they participate in the athletic festival, and for the beginning parts they just show like the other students just doing their part, participating against Class A and stuff. But then in the end they get to the Botaioshi, which is the one we're supposed to focus on. But then you get to the bit before that, like the part where they ran, like there was this race where they ran to eat food and cross line. I was like, wait, there's a part where Hara took the bread and she drank it, like literally drank it, and she's like, I drink bread. I'm like,
that's weird.
What? And the bread when she drank it looks like freaking, it doesn't look right. I'll say that much. Right on.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But I have to say, I did like this chapter, and especially the... the reveal of, all the... the reveal of, at the end, foreigners or whatnot. Yeah. But, it wasn't right at the end. It was, like, sort of more towards the middle when, when they were doing the tug of war and beating everyone. But, yeah, it is pretty much, kind of like, the difference between people that, people that are specialized in certain things can be better than even them. But, yeah, I did enjoy the part. It was like, the bread is nothing but a drink. It's so funny after she'd been drawn so goofily, and then suddenly it's like, oh, wait, no, now she's, like, being drawn seriously. That's funny. But, yeah, you do have plenty of funny moments, like, some characters are, arguing, like, during the three-legged race. It's like, hey, sexual harassment, stop that. It's like, wait, what?
How does that even work when you're doing a three-legged race?
And it's like, what's her face when she's... just crawling through the
Ayano
when she's crawling through the net, and it's just like there's no, it's like she's so fast, it's like there's no resistance in her body, and just
forever zero.
Yeah, and just her expression as she's crawling through, where she's sort of like, she's at the lead, but she's also just depressed because it's like, oh, why am I so good at this? Yeah, and then of course we also we also discover that their Class E's plan is to Class E's plan is to focus on defense, since you know, a perfect defense, since you know, they have no way of you know, they're outnumbered.
They're outnumbered. They're so, like outnumbered like 12, but like 12 more than them basically, because like Class A has 28 and they have 16. I think. Well, yeah, yeah, 12. Outnumbered by 12. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And then Class A's got those foreigners, and I'm like, 15-year-old in my ass. Is...
Indeed.
But then someone's like, no, it's true. They really are 15. They really are about the same age. I'm like, oh, shit. Freaking horse shit.
It. That doesn't warrant a swear, Mo.
No, it does.
No, it really doesn't. It's not stupid. It's
okay, fine.
It's funny. It's not stupid. It's not bad writing. You know, swearing is reserved for actual bad writing.
Okay,
this fine. Is meant to be funny, so.
But, no, I just...
Yeah. Nonetheless, yeah. Nonetheless,
there wasn't much to say about the chapter, to be honest, other than, you know, oh, they're setting up and...
Yeah.
When you see Class E's, you know, their defense, you know, some of the students are missing. Some of the boys are missing. You're like, okay, who's missing? And you're wondering if they're going to do a surprise attack, or maybe they're in the back or something. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. It is most likely to happen, but I don't know. They are saying that not a single guy is attacking, so you're like, interesting.
So those foreigners, one of them is Korean, one of them is French, one of them is American, Texas. Yeah. And the other is, what's the other one? Italian? Portuguese? I can't tell. I think it's Portuguese.
Yeah, it is kind of, it was Brazilian.
Brazilian.
Yeah. But yeah, it's also kind of funny how they're saying, it's like, oh, to differentiate between the teams, Class A will be wearing hats and long sleeves, and it's like, those aren't hats, that's headgear. So it's only okay for them to have defensive gear, huh?
And they're clearly having what, and they clearly have something under those long sleeves.
Yeah. So, but you know, still, that's kind of funny where it's like, oh, hey, look, we're, this is just to differentiate, and it's like, yeah, right.
This is all just to keep Iso Guy from losing his job, considering, you know, if Asan even falls on his word. Oh, there was actually a slight mistake in the terms. You still lose your job.
Indeed.
Jerk.
All right. Well, let's move on to Shokugeki no Soma. Which chapter were we on again?
74.
Excellent.
Yes, unlike Assassin's Creed Classic, this one's been updating regularly.
Yeah, which is nice.
Thank goodness.
Yep. It's another one of the cooking chapters, you know.
Basically, Hisoko's cooking kind of focuses on stimulating the human touch.
Yeah, and it very much is focused on, you know, on the, you know, the medicine herbs and allowing, you know, getting an impact from that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it has a good impact, but I think... But
then the impact!
Yeah. But then they're like, oh, no, it's going to be what's-his-face that's going to win because, I don't know, better meat, I guess. But, yeah, and so it's like, I guess she doesn't use the turtle meat for the hamburgers. Rather, she uses, you know, she grinds up the shell and stuff and infuses it in the bun and everything and all other parts of it. And it's
pretty
interesting. It's also interesting how, rather than how she doesn't cut all the way through the bun, rather it seems like it's folded over. Mm. And so, yeah, and it's kind of like how the lifeblood I added to the porty warms up the body from inside, and I'm like, ew.
That's not a hamburger. That's like a sub, man.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's kind of like that.
If it's a hamburger, the bun should be cut all the way and just placed, you know, like a freaking burger.
Yeah, but right. It is kind of interesting how they say that, you know, she is, her knowledge of the, you know, of the human body helps her know how to, you know, how to get it to react to her food. And I also like the the image is the image.
the principal.
Yeah, whatever you call it, the visualization of the match where she's
They call it foodgasm.
Yeah. Where she's
Dressed
up as a giant soft-shelled turtle, kind of like a Godzilla monster. And then you've got the principal who's dressed up as an actual Godzilla monster, except I can't remember his name. It was the robot one. But
Mechagodzilla?
It's not Mechagodzilla.
I don't know.
It's a different one. I forgot what his name was.
But when I looked at it, I thought of this particular name. Cardio X?
A little bit, yes.
Exactly.
But yeah, so, yeah, and it is, yeah, but then it's like Hayama is, you know, he's actually, it's interesting, he's frying his patty, but at the same time he's also cutting the kebab meat. So I'm thinking, interesting, so it might be a burger with kebab meat on top of it, and that actually sounds really delicious.
Plus, he is the master of the smells.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see where this one goes.
Smell you later.
Yeah, smell you later, jackass.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a good chapter. I enjoyed it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yep, other than that, it is kind of hard.
But according to Subaru, it kind of does feel like Hayama might have this. Because, let's face it, when it comes to food, smell is usually what wins.
True.
Usually, for me, in my case, if it smells good, I'll eat it. It doesn't matter if it tastes good or not. If it smells good, if it can overwhelm my sense of taste with the smell, then it won't matter. I can eat it.
Yeah. Well, it does have.
Since my taste buds are sensitive as heck, man.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the Kodansha chapters. Fairy Tale, yeah. Chapter 389: Twin Dragons versus the Underworld King. And we find out that. Apparently, Urza had told them about it, had sent them a letter, which is shown in a flashback, and I'm like, oh, wait, I didn't remember that. So, fair enough. But, yeah, still, it's the way they're, you know, they're like, oh, hey, we like Minerva. And I'm like, wait a minute, she was kind of acting like a jerk to you. Just like her father, but I guess
she's still our friend.
Yeah, friendship over
becomes
everything. But yeah, I do kind of like how they're like, oh, hey, look, there's like 3,000 faces on the continent. And then he's like, oh, don't worry, you have to manually activate it. But then he's like, oh, nope, the chairman could control them from a distance, but he's dead. He's like, well, our guild has a necromancer. Yeah.
We have a necromancer. Then we show that guy. Oh yeah, he's the guy that Lucy and Wendy saw the skeleton.
Yeah, and it's like, yep, that's a. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a necromancer, but.
Carson, I mean.
Yeah, and then you get fighting, and it's kind of a cool fight. You find out that the white dragon's breath actually looks a lot like the Kamehameha, like a lot, but it's basically a laser beam. But,
laser. Yeah.
And they fight, and Mard Gear is kind of OP. But then we also...
I like the panel with his eyes just going, oh, I'm like, look at those panels, man. It's freaking...
Yeah.
They're hilarious, but they're like, it's like, why are you staring so hard?
Yeah.
Not staring, but he it's more like he's like, he's like, you know, a muse. Like, it's like the muse for one side eye fake. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I also kind of like, Well, I don't know. Yeah, and we've got the bit at the end with Gray and Silver. And then, you know, yeah.
But he's like, you are not the man who I thought you were.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you are very familiar. I'd hope, and Silver's like, I'd hope you would have figured it out before I kill you. And it's like, you know, oh, you're not who I knew. And so I'm like, oh, come on. It better turn out that Silver is not his father, because if it does, I'll feel very insulted.
Mm-hmm.
And that Mashima was like, oh yeah, this is this was totally my intent.
So can we forgive him for that one chapter fluke with that chapter title that had nothing to do with whatever was going on in the first place?
Who knows, it's probably going to end up that Silver is his father, and I'll be at And I'll be insulted because, like, seriously, you didn't think we'd figure this out.
Also, apparently, Sting and Roar are going to fight Mardgear. Maybe they actually might, because they're Dragon Slayers. The only Dragon Slayers should fight the actual main bad guy.
Well, yeah. But nonetheless, I don't know. It was an okay chapter. I liked it enough.
But... yeah. Oh, I'm done with trying to hate characters. I'm just done. If I see a character do something horrible, I'm going to go... If I see a female character do something horrible to another character, I'm going to go, yeah, it's going to get really hard.
Yeah, it...
tired of that.
It does. Well, yeah. It is a bit... I don't know. The whole thing's a bit silly. So, whatever.
But then again, I guess we could say that Minerva did it because, you know, that's when her father was the guild leader. So...
yeah, true. Well, anyway, let's move on to Seven Deadly Sins, Chapter 82. The Incantation of Bravery.
This was a good chapter.
It was a really good chapter. I mean, it goes back and explains what Gil Thunder's deal is.
Hey, thank goodness. I feel like, okay,
yeah.
Put up shit on me.
And I also like how it's like, you traitor. And I was like, I'm no traitor. I was never on your side to begin with. And then you actually get the, you know, he's like, you have no idea how long I've waited for these past 10 years to take revenge on the man who killed my father. And I'm like, okay, good. You know.
Hello, just, my name is Gil Thunder. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Stop that. No, but, you know, it is kind of like one of those things. Okay, why is he with them if, you know, the dude killed his father? So they actually it actually addresses that. And so I'm like, okay, good. And he trashes him pretty well. And then then we find out that, when they were, Meliodas is known from the very beginning that, you know, when they were reunited in the Forest of Dreams, it...
It was chapter 4.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting where, well, it's a little later than that, actually. It was the beginning of volume 2.
Oh, okay. Well, what did he actually say, though? Like,
it's like, I'm stronger than any deadly sin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was,
That was the incantation Milius told him, like, 10 years ago to say.
Well, yeah, rather than an incantation, more of a,
chant? No, not chant.
Yeah, no, it's more like...
mantra,
you know,
mantra.
Yeah, mantra, that's it. But yeah, it's a little weird, the scene that we see, because it's like... apparently Gil Thunder is like coming and warns Meliodas about something. Is like, oh, you and your friends are in danger. And it's like... you know, I don't know, it's kind of weird, because when we saw them discover the, you know, the Chief Holy Knight in the flashback early on, they were caught off guard. But here it seems like, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Although, then again, I guess Gil Thunder was sort of like, oh, you know, you guys are in danger, but I can't tell you, I can't explain it, because if they found out, what am I going to do? And I guess after that, Meliodas was like, you know what, he did, so he could be surprised when he sees the, you know, the Chief Holy Knight dead, because, you know, he hadn't had it explained, and he didn't let Gil Thunder explain, because his whole deal is he wanted to, you know, if someone found out what's going on, then I guess they would have taken it out on him, and by taking it out on him, take it out on the Princess Margaret, who, yeah. But, so yeah, you get that phrase, is like, I'm stronger than any deadly sin, is basically a Meliodas' way of saying, hey, yeah, you know what, you don't need me to protect you, you're strong and everything. So, you know, kind of a, just a mantra that you can repeat to yourself, and, yeah. And then that's kind of like how he figured it out. He knew that someone must have been taken captive when Gil Thunder said that. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and then, of course, you get the fight between Gil Thunder and, what's his face?
Hendrickson,
yeah. And it's, yeah.
He killed him.
Yeah, he pretty much killed him.
Cut his arm, and was like, ah, and then all of a sudden stabbed him, like, oh, wow, he
cut
killed
his,
him.
Yeah, cut his arm off, impaled him, and then lightninged him. And, yeah, you kind of, I don't know, you kind of get this sense that, man, this is, you know, this is moving pretty fast.
And notice how it's not Milius that he killed Hendrickson. It was to kill instead.
Yeah, now they're going to go rescue Elizabeth. But, you know, it is kind of funny how it feels like the series is really moving. It feels like it's moving towards the final conflict because, you know, the big conflict was the, you know, the Holy Knights being evil. And now their leader, the one that was the actual evil one, has been killed. So I'm kind of wondering, okay, where is the story ending, or where does it go from here? Because they still have two of the sins to find. Granted, Merlin is very likely the person with Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, though that is kind of obvious, so maybe not, but chances are that's who it is. But yeah, and then you've got, but you've still got the seventh one that needs to be found. So I'm thinking that the story is going to continue after this, or something is going to happen along the lines of Elizabeth gets taken elsewhere, or the demons get released, and Elizabeth's soul is like stolen away or something, and needs to be brought back.
Yikes!
I can see the demons. The demons have to be unleashed. There's no way that they can't be. So, but overall, yeah. Besides the fact that I get this sort of sense that the series might be over soon, which I hope not, because I love this series.
But it's doing pretty well.
Yeah, I know. I don't know, yeah, but it just feels like it's moving to the final conflict. But then again, who knows? There could very well be more. Maybe we'll move on to the demons being in the world and they have to fight demons and whatnot, and maybe that will be its whole own arc. But we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, still, this was a really good arc, and I felt that Gil Thunder being a good guy was ultimately satisfying.
Yeah. You know?
You can even sort of explain away the him being an evil jerk before, because there's a pretty good reason for it. And so, yeah. And also the picture of him and Margaret hugging is kind of touching. So, there you go. All right. And it is also, and yeah, and also kind of like at the end when, Diane was like holding up Meliodas, like, ah, you're a mess, and you can hear this like crack, 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 and he's like, ah!
What the heck?
He's like, stop that, woman. He's like, you're crushing me.
Him.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, so, it looks like, yeah, that's that for that chapter, so, good chapter. I quite liked it.
I don't think it's gonna end. I really don't think it's gonna end yet. I mean,
I'd be surprised.
We still got about, like, two more sins to get anyway.
Yeah, that's why I'd be surprised.
Well, what was the main plot again? Wait, what's the word? I forgot.
To protect the, you know, to save the king from the holy knights.
Yeah.
So they're getting pretty close to that, which makes me think, oh, is it almost over? I don't know.
Maybe they get a new goal? Is that fine?
That's what I'm thinking, yeah. But yeah, we'll have to see. We will have to see. But I think for now, let's take a quick break and go ahead and wrap things up, okay?
All right.
This has been Manga Cubed, episode 102 for the week of June 23rd, 2014. The air conditioning that is right under my feet turned off. Now I am hot again. This is a sad
thing.
Dang
it, what the heck, man? I swear, what's up with you?
And, you know, I mean, I've rearranged my room/office space, and now the air conditioning vent is right where my feet are under my desk, and it's quite nice. Except it does mean that the air doesn't get to the rest of the room, but this is kind of a crappy air conditioner anyway. It doesn't reach up here well enough, but the thermostat is downstairs, so it's like, oh, hey, it's cool enough downstairs, and meanwhile we're up here and we're like, you son of a bitch.
I live in an apartment where the air conditioner is pretty much right near the doorway, the front door. And pretty much the only way for it to get into this room is I leave the door open itself, close every window, and somehow make sure try to lead like make like a pathway for the air to lead over here. But it usually doesn't, so I have to stand in the living room and get cool.
Air conditioner. I'm really tempted to just get a swamp cooler and install it in my window, because the way my room is set out, I've got two windows in my room, one right to the left of my desk, and then my desk is at the bed of the foot of my bed, and the other window is right next to my bed. So I'm just thinking, if I could just install an air conditioning unit in the window that's right next to my bed, that would be the greatest thing ever.
Why are you going to sleep for the time being, then?
Well, I have fans blowing on me all the time, so.
Huh.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll open the window. But yeah, I am certainly tempted. I might go to Walmart and see if I can find. I think they cost at least about $100.
Oh,
So might have to take a look-see and see what I can find. But in the meanwhile, let's go ahead and do the wrap-up, shall we? Mm-hmm. First, we've got an interview to go through. Words to Dive By. Interview with a Japanese editor. What if tomorrow never came? What if you were cursed to relive the same day for the rest of your life, and that day just happens to be the day you suffer a gruesome death? What sounds like a painful ordeal is everyday life for Keiji Kiriya, the hapless hero of Hiroshi Sakurazaka's All You Need Is Kill, the sci-fi novel that spawned a graphic novel, manga, and movie adaptations. Our friends at Neo Magazine recently had the chance to have a few questions answered by Koji Yoshida, the Japanese manga editor of the series. Koji Yoshida is the managing editor of Weekly Young Jump and has been the editor for a variety of manga series, including Death Note. Also, if you look at that, the image of his, the drawing of him, you will recognize that he is the real life inspiration for the editor of Hiramaru in Bakuman.
Are you serious?
Pretty serious, yeah. Most of the editors are inspired by actual editors in the Jump editorial department.
Wait. You're saying his picture is Hiramaru's editor, right?
Yeah, Hiramaru.
Oh, his editor. I thought you said Hiramaru something.
No. It's Hiramaru's editor. You know, the one that was constantly being all, oh, hey, I'm gonna trick you into, doing your work, and.
He does.
So I guess the thing is he is the one that works with Obata and the other one. But
and those two did say that they kind of relate to Hiramaru in some ways.
He's the editor of Death. He was the editor of Death Note.
Well, that explains everything.
Yeah. It also explains why Hiramaru got the hot babe at the end, even though he didn't deserve it. Seriously, that makes no freaking sense. But that is a topic for another time.
If we ever get to it.
Yeah, all right, so who do you want to do? Do you want to do Neo Magazine or Koji Yoshida?
The question is, do you want to read less or read more?
Do you?
I'll read less.
All right, go ahead.
Neo Magazine Neos ask, how and why was it decided to transform the novel into a manga?
It started with a request from the Super Dash Bunko. What the hell? That's a hell of an editorial. That's a hell of a name. Is that like the publisher name? Jeez.
Yes.
Super Dash Bunko Editorial Department, the publisher of the novel in Japan. With a movie starring Tom Cruise coming, they really wanted us to create a manga adaptation. From there, I read the novel and really liked it. I believe that because the characters were so strong, the story would be perfect for an adaptation.
Okay. What challenges did you anticipate the adaptation would bring?
We usually try to keep a manga adaptation as similar to the novel as possible, but in my mind, that doesn't always lead to an interesting manga, so my biggest concern was simply to make a great manga. I believe that novels and manga each have their own strengths, and to enhance a manga, you shouldn't fear changing around some things from the original novel.
I guess it does. Well, it does make sense, because it's adaptation, it's not the original series.
Well, none of
that. That's why anime can get away with it, but there's a line I don't like being crossed, and that's changing too much of the original.
Well, yeah.
Just because you feel like you have to or you want to. And I don't like it when it's the want to. When you have to, fine, but give a good reason, please. Don't piss the actual fans off. Otherwise, they'll just go, yeah. Whatever, the ones I respect the most are the ones who probably just go, you know what, I'm going to stick to the original series and never get into the adaptation.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's the difference between adapting something for necessity's sake and adapting something because you didn't like it from the original source material. Because you didn't like it in the original source material doesn't mean that other people didn't like it, and thus making that change would piss a lot of people off. A good example being, David Goyer, saying that if he were to do a Martian Manhunter movie or script, he basically said, oh yeah, the Martian Manhunter is so freaking goofy. I would do something like, he's like a creation from this genetics lab, and he's not the Martian Manhunter, that's goofy, he's just the Manhunter. And I'm instantly like, so that's what's going on in Hollywood. That's why you end up with so many unfaithful adaptations because Hollywood is filled with a bunch of jackasses that think they know better. And that's kind of depressing.
Hollywood writes. Hollywood makes movies.
Well, yeah, but
they don't write movies. But no, they do write movies.
They do write movies. They have writers.
I almost had them right there.
Yeah, David Goyer is the writer for the second Star Trek movie reboot. And
oh, that one.
His comment was very disheartening because it just goes to show that you've got a bunch of jackasses in Hollywood that don't actually give a crap about the source material, adapting the source material, so they make changes, not because it's important, but because they think, you know, they think, oh, this is just some goofy comic book thing. That's, you know, we need to change that, you know, and thus they end up showing that they're not nearly as creative as they think they are by taking a unique concept such as the last surviving Martian comes to Earth to fight crime and turns it into some green biological freak from some genetics lab escapes and does I don't know what the hell. It's pretty stupid.
And yeah.
There are some people that don't deserve to do adaptations. But anyway, moving on. Mo.
All right, hang on. The next question is, what did you have to change to adapt this to a manga?
In order to create an entertaining manga, we altered a few things such as making the story easier to understand and adjusting the tempo. But the hardest aspect was that in some instances we couldn't use the great dialogue from the novel as is. Many of the best lines were natural continuations from the narrative, and since we rarely use the narrative text, the catchy lines would just feel like they were coming out of thin air. We had many lines that made us sad to have to remove.
Oh, that explains some of those narratives in the throughout the chapters.
Yeah, but you know, it also, you know, that is the kind of thing that makes sense, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, right.
Yeah, it makes sense. Just we'll have to read the original novel itself. Then you used to edit manga and Weekly Shonen Jump. What differences are there when editing manga for Weekly Young Jump, the magazine that ran All You Need Is Kill in Japan?
Basically, there are almost no changes to how I work. I'm just trying to make sure the manga is something that I will enjoy and also something that the readers will enjoy. That's what I always focused on at Weekly Young. I always focused on at Weekly Young Jump, and it's the same now. Oh, wait a minute. That's a typo. It's supposed to read, that's what I always focused on at Weekly Shonen Jump. And it's the same now at Young Jump.
Yeah.
However, it is true that with Young Jump being a seinen magazine aimed at an older audience, I can get away with a lot more. It feels like I have much more leeway.
Much more leeway indeed.
Hmm. Yep, next one.
What is the market like for this type of sci-fi manga in Japan? Overseas, titles like Akira and Ghost in the Shell are always popular. But how is sci-fi for the seinen audience received?
There aren't that many Japanese science fiction titles, but with series like the recently concluded Gantz, which is horse shit, and the current Terra for Mars.
That one is awesome.
Yeah, I do believe that there is always a chance for a really popular one.
Okay. How was Mr. Sakurazaka, that's a tough name to say, involved in the adaptation process at all? Have you had any feedback from Mr. Sakurazaka about the manga?
He basically let us do what we wanted with the manga version. He reviewed the storylines for storyboards for each chapter, and he did correct us once an error in the explanations of the once on an error in the explanations of the loops. That was a great help. Also, the novel about green tea that appears in the manga and the info on Keiji and Rita's dog tags were provided by Sakurazaka Sensei.
Nice, nice. Mm-hmm. Wait, I wonder what that one error was about the loops.
No.
Oh well, we'll never know. Please describe the concept in a few sentences.
Boy meets girl on the ultimate battlefield. Most people focus on the time loops, the battle scenes, or the science fiction elements. But to me, this is a story about two young people, Keiji and Rita. I believe the core of the story is just how much people can care about each other under extreme conditions on the battlefield.
Hmm. How did you tackle the challenge of portraying the complex scientific concepts in the form of manga?
I personally focused on expressing the emotions of KG and Rita. If we wanted to get in depth with the scientific concepts from the novel, so much explanation would be needed that it would affect the enjoyment of the manga. So instead of focusing on that, I went with the character's emotions. I figured the best way to express the science was to show it through the art. I'm hoping that the readers can pick up the basic concepts intuitively through the art depicted on the pages.
I think we kind of did.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did.
All right. Now let's talk about the author comments.
Oh, boy.
One Piece's Eiichiro Oda, I'd rather be healthy and busy, but busy instead of on vacation and in pain. Sorry for all the trouble I've caused everyone on many fronts.
Thank goodness he's back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, okay. it's definitely better not to be in pain, so, you know.
Yeah, even if it's whole, you know, like you said, like the little joke you were saying about how, you know, his tonsillitis is actually what kept him writing the series a great way. Mm. Well, we'll see down the line for the next year and see what happens. But if he's been doing so well regardless,
yeah,
well, it'll be fine.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. All right, next one.
Okay. Naruto's Musashi Kishimoto. They revealed a new Zelda game at E3. I'm so excited, though we've been too busy to play much of the previous one. Is that Hyrule Warriors, or is that the one that's not Hyrule Warriors?
I think they're talking about the non-Hyrule Warriors one, because the Hyrule Warriors one is more, was it Dynasty Warriors, but with Zelda characters, so not really a true Zelda game, I guess. But
yeah.
I need to finish Twilight Princess, I really do. Need to connect my Wii and actually play the damn game.
Twilight Princess, oh boy.
I'm a little bit behind.
Have I completed that game? I completed that about like 10 times, and I'll say that about like 5 of those times weren't even me playing it.
Yeah, I realized that I kind of have to start over, because I could continue playing from where I am, but it's been so long since I've played. To the Yeti Castle.
Oh, man, that place is just so confusing.
Yeah, part of why I quit. But, you know, yeah, see, that was part of that's part of the thing, was that I got to that point, and then I stopped playing for some reason, and now I'm thinking, I want to play it again, but then I realized, oh, wait a minute. I tried playing it again, but then I didn't get very far because it had been so long since I played, so I was completely lost. I had no idea how to play the game anymore.
You do know if you start playing the game, you get to go through another hour-long introduction, right? Before you get into the actual game, right?
That's fine. I'll do it. It's fine.
No introduction.
Yeah. Anyway, Hunter x Hunter is Yoshihiro Togashi's. Yeah, I know. Yoshihiro Togashi. For some reason, the most common things to vanish off my desk are erasers. Number 2 is rulers.
Clearly, the borrowers are borrowing them. Probably. Where are my erasers going? We're going to need this to go to fall then. What were the rulers? Oh, we're just going to use them as matter.
Yeah. Like, well, I'm out of erasers and rulers. Time to take a hiatus. It's like, sir, you can just walk down to the art supply store. Nope. Hiatus.
Too old. I don't feel like it.
Yeah, dear. All right. Next one.
Isa Toys, now she called me. I went to J World. The Ichiraku ramen was good. You guys should go check it out.
I would if I could, but it's a little expensive to get over there.
And it's too far.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Stealth Symphony's Yoichi Amano. Rest in peace, Mr. Akio from the TV show Dashmura. Your wonderful smile was always reassuring.
Okay.
All right. Next one.
BTST Takubo. I really wanted to see the documentary, The Act of Killing, but I suddenly realized it's not playing in theaters anymore.
Yo-ho, a pirate's life for me. I mean, what?
Oh, wait. Funny thing was, when I saw that title, I was like, why does it sound familiar? You know, I'd never seen it. Mm. And I realized when I was actually online trying to look up a lot of movies that pretty much focus on assassins. Like, you know, main character being assassins and, you know, assassin movies. Hmm. Not assassination movies. Assassin movies. You know, hitman movies.
Hmm.
Like James Bond and stuff. And I just, and one of the searches kind of yielded Active Killing. I was like, what the heck is that I'm looking for? So I was like, why is this appearing in my face again? Go away.
Yes.
I'm going to check it out now.
Alright, let's do our rankings.
Okay.
Alright, number 4, One Punch Man.
Ah. Okay.
It was, no. I mean, I don't like it when it's just action, but then again, I don't know enough about Hunter x Hunter to like it, Naruto is a piece of crap. Stealth Symphony is garbage, and I didn't read Yu-Gi-Oh! Zeal. So hey, guess what? There's only 4 manga left. So One Punch Man.
I feel the same about that, except One Punch Man is my number 4. It's Hunter x Hunter.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, yeah, you know a little bit more about the series than I do, but yeah.
Because I like the fact that how Game of Thrones is saying, hey, you know these 5 things, we can't really kill them at all. We have to catch them and seal them away. I'm like, eesh, that kind of sucks. It's like, if it was Bleach or whatever, oh, we just beat them with superpowers and all this. Like, no, it's like, no, we're just humans. We can't really do this easily. Right. Can't do that.
All right, well, my number 3 is Bleach, just because, I don't know, had some. It was fun enough, it was okay, I liked it enough.
That was also my number 3.
Uh-oh. All right, number 2? One Piece.
Ah, okay.
It just had too many problems with it for me to legitimately say it was my number 1. You know, there are a lot of moments of, wait, where did you get that key from? Or, wait, why does Riku suddenly have that opinion about the Straw Hats? I thought they gave him plenty of reason not to, but okay, he's just there so that Viola can share the message of the arc. So, you know, it was focusing on the message rather than the story, which I think is bad. So that's why it's number 2 this week, unfortunately.
Number 2 for me because it feels like Alabasta 2.0 without all the Straw Hats there this time.
A little bit, yeah. All right, number 1.
It was still good. It just wasn't that great.
All right, number 1 is Nisekoi.
Yeah.
It's pretty hilarious. So.
The dude's got the best face.
Yes, it is quite a hilarious series. So.
I don't want to. And Marco's like, is it really that bad? According to her, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, it was very much a very hilarious chapter. And I'm looking forward to next week's chapter. But, all right. Now, everyone, remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can go to burninglizardstudios.com, where we have all the episodes posted. You can also send us an email to burninglizardstudios@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter @burninglizard. This week, we actually have a comment.
We do?
Yes, it was in response to episode 50, when the main character sucks. yeah. I almost missed this one because it was kind of buried among all the spam, but Lori Henderson says, I'm sorry, but I can't agree with you on your topic. How dare you? There are a lot of reasons to not like Naruto, but wanting to save Sasuke isn't one of them. You can hate Sasuke all you want, I certainly do, but it doesn't make Naruto a bad character for doing so. Not saving him would not only go against the person he's become, it would go against the main goal of becoming Hokage. If he can't save one person he considered his friend, how can he think he can lead a whole village? Saving Sasuke fits in perfectly with his stated main goal. I have a lot of problems with Ichigo, but I don't think you can blame him for his reaction instead of action structure. His always having to save people is really no different than most U.S. comic superheroes. They don't have main goals. They are just there to react, save a person, city, country, or world from some crazy supervillain plot. I really don't see a difference, therefore, a reason to single out Ichigo out for doing the same thing. And there are plenty of manga characters who do the same thing that don't get that condemnation. Goku of Dragon Ball comes first to mind. He didn't really have a big goal to drive him, and he spent most of his time saving people. All right. Well,
you know, that was episode 50. I can't remember when the heck that was.
It was a while back. That was back in June, almost a little bit more than a year ago. It was on June 3rd of 2013. But, yeah, now as far as me condemning Ichigo but not others, the reason for that is that if I didn't think of them, you know, I just, for some reason, at least I'm pretty sure I didn't. Bear in mind, this was a year ago, so I can't remember exactly what I said. So if I mentioned Goku but didn't say condemn him the way I did Ichigo, whoops. But usually, if I didn't mention Goku, then that was because I just didn't think of him. But, yeah, no. Well, as far as it goes.
I can't remember if I condemned Sasuke at all, to be honest, but I know that last year I was probably a bit more forgiving. Can't remember.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that we were condemning Sasuke, it's that we were saying Naruto is bad by association. Now, I still stand by that, in that I view Sasuke as like a rotten apple. His mere presence makes the other characters bad. Because, and I do feel that that I can say Naruto is a, you know, I like dislike Naruto because he wants to save Sasuke, because do keep in mind this is the guy that has been going on a murder spree and also tried to murder the girl that Naruto says he's in love with. Okay? The fact that Naruto still wants to save this guy, even though he attempted to, you know, pretty much murder Sakura and a lot of other people that Naruto cares about, is it the reason it makes me dislike Naruto is because that's a level of naivete that I just don't like anymore. You know, it's like, oh, I'm a shonen hero, so I'm gonna save my friend even though he tried to murder everyone I care about.
I'll forgive him, forget everything. He's still my friend.
You
I'm still
know,
gonna save him.
it's like if that ha I mean, yes, it's manga, but at the same time, I'm looking at it and thinking, if that happened in the real world, that person would then turn around and kill everyone you love and you included. It's just Sasuke in general just makes everything about that manga awful. He's even when he wasn't a bad guy, as he was just really uncomfortable, and it may just seeing him be all, you know, like turning into a sociopath, basically. And he's just very dis yeah, it's just he's very disturbing. I hate the character, and thereby, I mean, Naruto wanting to save his friend is not a bad thing.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
The if he didn't want to save his friend, that would make him a bad person. Wanting to save his friend makes him a good person. The problem is that Naruto, the person that Naruto wants to save is Sasuke. And it's like Naruto comes across as a worse character because he's absolutely blind to the fact that Sasuke is a complete monster. The writer is blind to the fact that Sasuke is a complete monster. So everything involving him just goes bad. And the more he's involved in the story, the more I hate the other characters because I just can't help but read it and think, okay then, but you're willing to forgive this guy, but he.
I mean, can we actually forget the part when Sasuke tried to kill Sakura and Naruto saved her, and yet somehow,
Yeah.
yeah.
It just it's moments like that that make me think that Kishimoto doesn't know how to write romance. Because if 'cause like every time he tries to do something with romance, you end up with Naruto completely ignoring Hinata's feelings, or you end up with Naruto not reacting the way he's supposed to when Sakura's life was in danger, you know? I mean, it's like this is a character trait that was established early on, but then it disappeared, and he's not reacting the way he should. You know, any other manga character that had have come into that situation when someone tried to kill the girl that they're in love with would have not reacted calmly. They would have reacted with, I'm a frickin' kill you. Maybe that means he's meant to be portrayed as more mature, but to me it comes off as unrealistic. All right, and as far as the Ichigo reaction instead of action,
Wait, reaction to what?
reaction to, you know, like, oh, enemies attack, they kidnap this girl, I save girl. You know?
Oh,
Granted, yes, superheroes, that is kind of their thing. I wasn't thinking of that superheroes at the time, but the thing is also that when I'm thinking of manga, I'm thinking in terms of other manga, and all the manga that I really, really, really like tend to have a goal. You know, there's a simple goal that these characters are trying to accomplish, whether it be to find their father, to find the One Piece, to find their father who is also a dragon, to find God and then eat him. Toriko, you atheist sociopath.
How about his strongest type of Kaneki?
His goal, well, yeah, well, his goal, become stronger, protect Mew, which isn't as much of an external goal. It is definitely more with, it is more along the lines of what Ichigo's goal is, where Ichigo is, I will protect people, but he never specifically says, I will become stronger. You know, he becomes stronger. So he is kind of similar to Kenichi in History's Strongest Disciple Kenichi, except the difference being Kenichi feels more focused, while Ichigo is more, I'm gonna protect people. And then he just feels like he lacks focus the entirety of the series. You know, his goals are dictated on the circumstances, not on his internal, you know, opinion, you know, like his internal self.
If his sisters were attacked, like, almost every freaking arc.
I have no idea what you're trying to go with there.
I don't even know what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to come up with something. I was trying to say, like, you know, if you actually have, like, a certain focus to of someone, of people to protect, that would be fine. But, like you said, when he just, I'm going to protect my town.
Yeah.
Okay, get your town. That's fine.
Yeah, and the thing is that I feel that the, you know, the characters that just react to danger instead of being, you know, more proactive, I feel those work more in stories where it's not an ongoing story. Most manga is an ongoing story. Bleach, while it has different arcs, is still meant to be read in order, you know? Well, say, for example, Batman or Superman, you can read those stories more or less in whatever order you want.
Because they're done by, because even though it's by, even though they're from the same company, publisher, they sometimes, most of the time, end up being written by different people.
Well, they're always written by different people.
Always written by different people, okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, granted, you have certain volumes that connect the writings of the same writer, but that's because that's the one that's currently assigned to the character. But nonetheless, you know, each story has, you know, each arc or each story is meant to be more self-contained with the character. Like, for example, Batman's goal in Death of the Family, stop the Joker, okay? And Ichigo kind of somewhat does that in that something happens, he reacts to it. If you view it in the sense of these are more self-contained stories, like Rukia gets kidnapped, save Rukia. Orihime gets kidnapped, save Orihime. That's kind of a problem where Kubo used that same motivation 2 times in a row. And when seen on their own, that works as good enough motivation. But at the same time, when seen as an overall whole, he doesn't have a goal. And for me, stories that are meant to be, you know, individual stories that are meant to be read in a row, it works better when they, I don't know. I mean, it can work when characters don't have a specific goal. Granted, for example, the Dresden Files, where his goal changes from book to book because, you know, he isn't, you know, in the story saying, I'm going to become the greatest wizard ever. No, it's more, no, I'm just going to live, pay my rent, deal with whatever problems as they come. And it can work. But for some reason, it just sticks out with me for Ichigo that he doesn't have a goal, you know?
He doesn't. I don't.
Yeah, so,
I mean, you may have said it, but it doesn't feel clear-cut to me at all.
Yeah, it's, well, and not only that, I mean, it's having a specific, I'm going to be king of the pirates kind of goal isn't necessarily important, you know, per se. I mean, it certainly helps give the character some focus. So, but yeah, if you you can decide not to have a clear goal, but I do feel that sometimes it may make it harder to write that character, which, you know, doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, but at the same time, it means you're going to have to be a little more creative with how you use the character. In Ichigo's case, maybe him having a clear goal is not a problem when considered against many other types of stories and not just manga, but compared to characters like Naruto and Luffy and so on, it does seem like a bit of an oversight, you know? Mm. And especially because, I don't know, I guess my reaction to that is because, well, that's how you do it in shonen manga. You know, the character has a goal, even if that's not the main focus. You know, I mean, Luffy wants to be king of the pirates, but at the same time, the things that he does and his goals per arc change, of course. Or Toriko's is constantly, look for this different kind of food, but ultimately I'm going to find God, which,
Raku's is, what was it? It's, okay, I know it's not battle, but still, his is pretty much just to find out what the dependent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the giving a character a main goal gives the story focus and something to head towards, you know. Mm-hmm. Not having that does cause the story to feel a little more meandering. Sometimes that's good, but when it's meant to be read from beginning to end in one go, that's a problem. With Batman, I can decide to read The City of Owls. I can't. I have to start with...
City what?
I have to start with The Court of Owls and then read The City of Owls. But then after I do those two volumes, I can go read whichever one I want. I can decide, you know what? I'm going to go read The Black Mirror, or I'm going to go read The Gates of Gotham. Because...
To be honest, there's a lot of manga I read that aren't even battle manga, and I can actually list each of their specific goals that the main character has.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah.
Bleach, I can't. I really cannot come up with what Ichigo wants. So, okay, the general idea is he wants to protect his friends, his family. That's fine. He's like a superhero. That kind of gets the other, but then that's it.
Yeah.
And then when we have those two main story arcs before the time skip, where he rescues two women important to him, then and that's pretty much all we get for pretty much, you know, it's kind of... defeat the purpose of the whole, I'm going to protect people.
Yeah, well...
When you're only protecting two people.
Well, no, I mean, even that, his focus was so vague. It was just, I want to protect people. And so, by default, he has to be reactionary. The problem is that he's always reactionary, you know? It just doesn't ever feel like he ever takes the initiative, because the entire story is focused around how he reacts to threats, you know, that does become a problem with series that aren't travel stories, you know.
Yeah.
Well, a series like, say, for example, One Piece, you know, they're traveling places, they're actively moving to new places and then reacting to things as they find in these places. But with a series like Bleach, it's mostly... you always come back to the same place, and then you wait for a new threat to come to them, which it can work, but it can also be problematic. And I find that other characters not having goals does not excuse the lack of a clear focus for Ichigo's character. It just means those other characters should have clear goals as well. And I would even say that, well, I don't know, some characters it's kind of hard, but, you know, I say, for example, like Batman, whatnot, his goal is to he wants to eradicate crime. That's his goal. And he does a lot of times react to things instead of taking action.
He responds pretty fast.
But yeah, and not only that, but I mean, one of his main character traits is that he's constantly preparing to react better. While with Ichigo, you don't see that. He's there, living normal life, something happens, he reacts to it, he realizes he's too weak, he goes and he trains. Even his proactivity in training and becoming stronger is determined by... outside action. While with a character like Batman, yes, he is a reaction instead of action kind of character, but at the same time, he is preparing for everything independent of whatever villain is showing up at the time. Ichigo doesn't start preparing until after he sees people, you know, come in and say, hey, we're gonna wreck shit, you know? It's like, you know, whenever you never see him being all, I'm going to train and become better, and that's part of the problem, is that you can have someone react instead of act. It works, but there needs to be something there that causes them to, you know, that causes them to act in some way, whether it just be preparing or training. It can't all be, oh, look, something happened, now I need to do things to fix it. It has to be, I'm preparing so that... I can, you know, face these threats. Oh, look, there's a threat bigger than I thought, than anything I've ever seen. Well, I need to prepare, I need to train more. But, you know, the fact that the character was training beforehand helps. But that's my response to that.
I just want to list about 5 manga that I read and enjoyed, or someone enjoyed, but... when it comes to their makers having, you know, an actual purpose, it's actually clear-cut and doesn't feel confusing. Although some did feel confusing, but it's like, okay, we know what they're doing. One, Shogeki no Soma. Wait, what was it again? What was it? He wants to pretty much beat his father, I guess, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's why his father sent him to school. Yeah, that's his goal. That's his goal. We're seeing that too. Nisekoi, Raku wants to find the promised girl.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pendant, and we're still trying to figure it out. It's getting closer at some point, but still trying to figure it out. Full Metal Alchemist, the Elric brothers want to get their bodies back.
Mm-hmm.
See, Maho Sensei Negima. Negi wants to find his father. Mm-hmm. Isn't that? Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
And number five is, well, Fairy Tail.
Yeah.
Actually, I want to say hi to the comic brother, where Hayate pretty much is trying to pay off his debt of 1
mm-hmm.
billion, one, was it 1 million, 1 billion? It just owes a lot of, a lot of money. Basically, when it rounds up to the U.S. dollars, it's about 1 million something.
Right. It's probably a billion yen or something. But anyway, yeah. It,
like that. They have their
goal. Yeah. In conclusion, you don't need a specific stated goal per se, but it really does help. And it is one of the reasons why I dislike Ichigo. I mean, a lot of dislike of characters does come from personal opinion, and my personal opinion is that Ichigo does not pull off the react instead of act model of storytelling very well. So, all right, and that is that. I think we are done with this week's episode. We, like I've said, we have you. There are ways you can contact us, and if you want us to discuss your opinion and say why you're wrong, no, that's not actually what we do. But you know, sharing opinion,
it's fine.
Good. Yeah, but you know. Yeah, if you feel that you want to, if you feel that we've said something that you disagree with, let us know. We will say why you're wrong and why we're right. Ha ha. Or
no,
maybe
it's fine. You have your opinions. I pretty much am. What's the word? Impartial, partial, neutral in some thoughts. You know, I like I said with Usate, he's just a strange case for me. For you, you hate him. For me, I'm just trying to just. Workaround going, is he really worth saving Naruto?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to, I want to root for Naruto's sake, but at the same time, I'm just going, is he really worth saving after the stuff we've seen him do? I don't know, but we'll see what happens then.
Yes, but anyway.
Yeah, go ahead, wrap it up.
Anyway, yes, backtracking. Jeez. But like I was saying, if, you know, maybe somebody will have disagrees with our opinion and they'll say something that causes us to agree with them. Maybe, but I'm kind of pig-headed, so good luck. Person that makes me agree with them wins a prize or something. The satisfaction of knowing that you made me agree with you. There you go. No, but anyway, that is that. Come back next week for more manga commentary and discussion and opinions that may or may not be right or wrong. But until then, remember, the manga is always better. Except for the case of possibly Attack on Titan. We'll see you all next week.